Today's episode of Ariel Helwani's MMA show contains explicit language that may not be suitable for all audiences. Listener discretion is advised.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to Ariel Helwani's MMA show!
Back in your life on this Monday, December 2nd, 2019. Hello again, everyone. I'm Ariel Helwani. Welcome back to the program. Hope you're doing well if you're snowed in today. Hope you're joining us on this first winter storm of the season. It's great to be here for another episode of the show. We have a lot to discuss, but as you saw right off the top, we do today's show with a very heavy heart. We found out late last week that Anaya Blanchard was found dead, and this was our worst fears confirmed, and can't stop thinking about Walt Harris and his family. Found this out around Thanksgiving, and just a horrific, horrific turn of events. In fact, Walt posted a lovely message on Instagram that I wanted to share right off the top before we do anything, because this is more important than anything that we will be talking about on today's show. And I want to read this message because it warmed my heart. And you know, as a father of a young girl, I felt especially touched by it. "My sweet baby girl," he wrote, "I just want to thank you for helping me change my life for the better, for teaching me how to be a man and a better father, for being my biggest fan, win, lose, or draw, for always knowing what to say to put a smile on my face and lift me up when I was down and wanted to give up. You lit up my world in so many ways. The pain is unbearable. I know you want me to be strong, but it's so hard, baby. It's so hard. I'm going to find a way. I promise you I will. Right now, nothing makes sense, and I'm so lost. I just want you back. I hope I made you proud. I'm going to keep going, Daddy. Just need some time. I love you so much. Look after us like you always did. We need you now more than ever. My little mighty, mighty tiger is an angel now. I love you, baby girl, forever and ever." And so that was the message from Walt. Very hard to read. Once again, saw it when he posted it around 4 days ago. What a great guy. And he shared his story with us about overcoming depression and using martial arts to get out of that dark time in his period. And I can't imagine what he and his wife and his entire family is going through right now. So we just wanted to send our condolences to the Harris and Blanchard family and let them know that we are thinking of them and that the entire MMA community is thinking of them and hoping that they can somehow get through this time. Now, we try to move along and talk about the other news of the week. This is Jimmy V week here at ESPN. It's a very special time for all of us. It's for a great cause. And this particular week is especially notable for us involved in the MMA / UFC community, because on Wednesday, it's Stuart Scott Day. And on Saturday, the Washington, D.C. Fight Night, the UFC is back this Saturday, by the way, after the two-week hiatus, is actually being put on in honor of the great Stuart Scott, who sadly passed away around 5 years ago due to cancer. One of the all-time greats, a legend here at ESPN, a man that I looked up to long before I ever knew that it was possible to work at ESPN. He was a big MMA fan and really supported the sport long before it was mainstream and the cool thing to cover, and long before it was here at ESPN. And so this Saturday's event is being dubbed the quote-unquote Fight Like Hell event. That's in reference to a very famous speech that he said around 5 years ago at the ESPYs as he was battling cancer. And so here's a quick look at how Stuart is being honored this week and why his attachment to Saturday's event is so special. Take a look.
Stuart Scott was my friend. He was also a game-changing SportsCenter anchor who brought his unique personality to the show every night. Stuart battled cancer bravely, and throughout the fight, he trained in MMA. He loved the sport and took every opportunity to be part of covering the UFC.
The UFC has put an octagon here on our campus, and they're going to take it away. I'm like, why not just leave it here, man? We can have some fun.
Stuart died from cancer at the age of 49, amazingly enough, almost 5 years ago. And we honor him to this day through the Stuart Scott Memorial Cancer Research Fund, a part of the V Foundation. He would have loved that we have a UFC fight night in his honor. I wish so much that he were here instead. So please join us in honoring Stuart by remembering his words to fight like hell and help the V Foundation eliminate cancer.
When you die, it does not mean that you lose to cancer. cancer. You beat cancer by how you live, why you live, and in the manner in which you live. Fight like hell. And when you get too tired to fight, then lay down and rest and let somebody else fight for you.
An absolute legend. If you're unfamiliar with Stuart Scott, if you're from outside of the United States and you don't know the impact that he had here at ESPN, trust me when I say, without people like him, ESPN isn't what it is today. And as you saw in that clip, he was a big fan of MMA. You saw him training with Chris Weidman and Gilbert Melendez here in Bristol, Connecticut, a big, big proponent of the sport and a big fan of the sport. And as you can see right over here, ESPN and the V Foundation are teaming up to raise awareness once again and funding for cancer research. This is the 13th annual V Week for Cancer Research. It runs December 3rd through December 14th. ESPN is dedicating December 4th as Stuart Scott Day in honor of the great Stuart Scott's fight with cancer. And the UFC is dedicating Saturday's card on ESPN to Stuart Scott. They're calling it the Fight Like Hell Night. You heard him say that during the speech. In fact, on Wednesday's podcast, this Helwani Show podcast that we do each and every Wednesday, I will be having Rich Eisen, his longtime partner, on the show, and that coincides nicely with the Stuart Scott Day festivities to remember Stuart and talk about his love of all things mixed martial arts. To donate or find more information on the V Foundation, visit v.org. And back in May of 1999, 20 years ago, 20 plus years ago, I was a youngster. I flew to New York City with my good friend Mo Liebman. We went to see the Knicks-Hawks second round playoff game at Madison Square Garden. And ESPN was there covering the event. And at the time, I had already begun dreaming of becoming a broadcaster. I wanted to become a broadcaster. There was a little dream in the back of my mind of coming to work at ESPN. But again, this is 1999. I'm in the 11th grade. So it's a dream, but it's kind of a Hail Mary type of dream, if you know what I'm saying. And so I remember being at this game. The Knicks won, by the way. They went up 3-0 over the Hawks. Chris Dudley had a phenomenal game. The crowd was chanting, "Dudley, Dudley." It was amazing. I remember seeing that Stuart Scott was hosting the post-game festivities for ESPN. I went down, I waited for him. And in fact, I had the opportunity to briefly, ever so briefly, meet Stuart Scott. I extended my hand to give him the old fist bump. And as you can see right over there, there I am rocking my Knicks hat and my Latrell Sprewell jersey. I was at the time 16 years old, and there's Stuart Scott giving me the old fist bump. And I was more excited about that exchange than had I met anyone on the Knicks or any player there. I really looked up to him, Rich Eisen. They were so great hosting SportsCenter. And that just meant so much to me. That little brief exchange right over there meant so much to me. So I obviously never got to work with Stuart Scott. And when I got here, he unfortunately had long since passed. But this is an amazing thing that ESPN is doing and the UFC are doing this Saturday. And I think it's great that even for people who don't know a lot about him, hopefully they'll get to learn more about him as they watch the card this Saturday. And this is the main card right over here. As I said, the UFC is back after a 2-week hiatus. Early prelims at 5:45 Eastern on ESPN Plus, and then the prelims move over to main ESPN at 7, main card at 9. Alistair Overeem against Jairzinho Rozenstruik. We spoke to Jairzinho for the first time last week on the program. Later today, we'll talk to Alistair Overeem. I'll give you today's lineup, by the way, in a matter of moments. Return of Cynthia Calvillo. I'm looking forward to that. How about Stefan Struve against Ben Rothwell? I'm really looking forward to seeing how Aspen Ladd responds from that quick knockout loss to Jermaine Duranemi back in July. Cody Stamann against Song Yadong, up and comer at 135. Rob Font against Ricky Simone. That's just the main card. Solid card from top to bottom. Third to last UFC card of the decade of 2019. Of course, 245 the following week, and then the South Korea event on December 21st. So a lot of exciting things happening this week, and hopefully you'll be tuning in for all of them, including this program. Let's talk about today's lineup, and then we'll talk about some of the news of this past week, because it was a very eventful back end of the week. Today's lineup is as follows. At 3:45, we're going to talk to a longtime favorite on this program, the flying judoka himself, Robert Whiteford. It's been a while. Longtime fans of this program may know that he used to appear on the show all the time, left the UFC, worked his way back up, and recently returned at the Bellator event last week in London. And, you know, I saw that, you know, he was on a bit of a winning streak and he had not fought in around 18 or so months. And I was kind of curious about that because usually in the midst of a winning streak, as you're trying to work your way back to the UFC, you're not taking off that long in between fights. And then I saw a post-fight scrum after his win over Sam Cecilia, a great comeback win last Saturday. It was on MMAfighting.com, and I had no idea that he was going through all that he was going through. He started to break down, talked about his divorce after being married for just a year, about his battle with alcoholism and depression, all these things that I had no idea Robert Whiteford was going through. And so I'm really looking forward to having him. You recall we used to call him the Haggis Hunter back in the day, and he told us that great story about, you know, hunting haggis, and I fell for it, as I typically do when people tell me these stories, because I guess I'm gullible like that. Anyway, I'm really looking forward to catching up with Robert. That will be at 3:45. At 3:25, we'll talk to Alistair Overeem. The Ream is back, and he's headlining this event on Saturday against Jairzinho Rozenstruik, and he's won his last two in a row, so a bit of a renaissance for the Demolition Man. I'm looking forward to talking to him. We'll also talk to Tony Ferguson at 3:05. You may have heard late last week that Tony is in fact going to be fighting Khabib Nurmagomedov on April 18th. Fifth time they have booked this fight. Hopefully this time it will actually come to fruition. I'll talk more about that on today's program. At 2:25, we will air our Matzah Ballin feature with Israel Adesanya. You'll recall around a month or so ago, he was in studio on the program. Well, afterwards, we did our second Matzah Ballin. It's really our third if you want to count the Rampage Jackson one from around 9 or so years ago, but as far as the ESPN era is concerned, it's the second one. First one was with Action Bronson. This one with Israel. We had matzo ball soup. We had a Reuben. It was great. We talked about a bunch of other things as well, but you'll really enjoy that. And that will be at 2:25. At 2:05, we'll talk to Alberto El Patron, a.k.a. Alberto Rodriguez, a.k.a. Alberto Del Rio. Yes, that man. You remember him. Dos Caras Jr. He actually returns to MMA this Saturday as well. First fight since 2010. And he's going up against Tito Ortiz. You know that fight, Combate Americas? It's happening in Hidalgo, Texas. We'll talk to him about why it's happening at 2:05. And then at 1:45, we'll talk to Valentina Shevchenko. Her fight against Caitlin Chookagian was made official late last week as well. That's UFC 247 in Houston, Texas, February 8th, right under the Johnny Bones Jones versus Dominic Reyes fight. And at 1:25, we will talk to a man that I've wanted to have on the program for quite some time. He is having a phenomenal 2019 campaign. He and a lot of his fighters think that I'm snubbing him when I talk about who could be the coach of the year. Saif Saud of Fortis MMA, the owner and founder of that great gym. These are the fighters that he coaches. Some of the fighters, Steven Peterson, Diego Fajeda, Alex Morono, Ryan Spann, Jeff Neal, who's fighting Mike Perry in a couple weeks, Miles Johns, Charles Byrd, Lonzo Menifield, Kennedy Nzechukwu, Macy Chaisson, Uriah Hall recently, and Eric Anders as well. Just some of the fighters. Recently was training with Kristaps Porzingis, my guy, from the Dallas Mavericks at the gym in Dallas. So I'm looking forward to talking to Saif Saud. But of course, the big news of last week before we get to the guests, the return of Conor McGregor. Yes, the notorious one. He is in fact coming back on January 18th. Against Donald Cerrone, UFC 246. Someone just sent me something on Instagram moments ago. What's 2 plus 4 plus 6? 246, UFC 246. Proper 12. How about that? The stars align. So, Conor versus Cerrone. They are doing it January 18th. In fact, this wasn't even a pay-per-view scheduled. They were going to start the calendar year on January 25th with the Raleigh, North Carolina event. But once it became clear that Conor wanted to return, was eager to return, had this plan to fight three times in 2020, they actually slotted this one in. And for a minute, it was unclear if it was going to happen. There was some hurdles with his visa, some other hurdles to try to get the deal done, negotiations. But by all accounts, it was actually a pretty easy one as far as Conor McGregor negotiations are concerned. And they got it done. And the opponent is Donald Cerrone. And it's happening January 18th in Las Vegas, T-Mobile Arena, first pay-per-view of 2020. And it was interesting because when this news came out, I saw a lot of people, as is typically the case, belly aching, criticizing, whining, critiquing, especially on Twitter, the vocal minority, that this isn't the fight to make, that Conor is ducking Donald Cerrone, that Conor is ducking the likes of Justin Gaethje and Jorge Masvidal and Tony Ferguson. Name a fighter, he's ducking him, that this wasn't the fight. And I was reminded back in early 2019, not that long ago, when Cerrone was enjoying this renaissance, the dad, you know, dropping down to 155, everyone was all excited. He should be the guy. Remember after his win over Alex Hernandez? He should be the guy. Remember after his win over Ally Quinta? He should be the guy. But a funny thing happened in his last two fights. He fought two of the best lightweights on the planet, Tony Ferguson and Justin Gaethje, and now all of a sudden he's a bum. Now all of a sudden he's a cupcake. Now all of a sudden he's a tomato can. And everyone hates this fight. Everyone says that it makes no sense, that it doesn't make, you know, any sense for Conor, that Cerrone doesn't deserve it, that they're trying to protect Conor, that he's ducking X, Y, and Z. And I couldn't believe, look, I've come to expect this kind of rhetoric. I've come to expect it from the people, but I just couldn't understand. I understand that people, everyone wants to see, I think, especially online, there's this feeling of like, we want to see Conor fall flat on his face. We have wanted it ever since he debuted against Marcus Brimage. And over the past year, he has given us a lot of reasons to root against him. A lot of the things that he has done over the past year and change have been indefensible, have really given a lot of fuel to the critics, to the detractors about who this man really is. And so I think that when people talk about his return, they want to see him fight a Gaethje, they want to see him fight a Masvidal, because they want to rid the UFC of this man once and for all. And they don't take a step back and look at, hey, if I am crafting the comeback for Conor McGregor, am I going to really throw him in? A guy who hasn't won since November of 2016, a guy who hasn't fought since October of 2018, am I going to throw him in there against a title contender? Am I going to throw him in there against a champion, as was, you know, the dialogue not that long ago? No, this is actually, for the first time in a long time, a realist approach to where he is in his career. A realist approach to where he is right now in his life. If you want him to succeed, if you are managing him, if you are trying to craft this comeback, if you're trying to orchestrate this three fights in 2020 campaign that they're talking about, are you really going to throw him in there against a guy who's on a 10-fight winning streak, 5-fight winning streak? Or are you going to throw him in there against a guy who's a name, who's a fan favorite, who is the winningest fighter in UFC history, who's got a resume, who's been talking about this fight for over 4 years? To me, that makes a hell of a lot more sense. I'm not trying to protect Conor McGregor. In fact, I'm telling you, the guy hasn't won since November of 2016. I'm telling you that he doesn't deserve a title fight off the bat. I'm telling you that he doesn't deserve a number one contender fight. And I'm not trying to protect Donald Cerrone in this exchange as well. Donald Cerrone doesn't like me. Donald Cerrone doesn't want to talk to me. I walked up to Donald Cerrone in Chicago at the media day to quote unquote bury the hatchet with him. And he told me to go buzz off. Doesn't want to talk to me. I'm not trying to protect the UFC. Trust me. That's the last thing I'm trying to do in this whole entire exchange. If you only knew the stuff that I had to deal with, I'm just telling you to like it is. If you understand the fight game, if you understand how this all works, tune-up fights, whatever you want to call this, comeback fights, this is how it works. You ease your way back into it. You get your mojo back. You get your confidence back. You don't jump in there with the sharks. That was the problem with the Khabib fight last year. That was the problem with it. He needed some time to get the cobwebs out, to get his mojo back, to get that, you know, that motor fueling again. That's what we're doing here. And so me, this is a breath of fresh air. This is exactly how you should be crafting the comeback. I mentioned 4.5 years ago. I mentioned that there's a long history here. You could go back to that. Remember when they had that exchange at that press conference? I believe we have the clip. Lest you forget, you almost have forgot. This is when it started. September 4th, 2015. This is when it started between Donald Cerrone and Conor McGregor.
Yeah, it's red panty night when you sign to fight me, yeah? Back at home with your wife. It's a celebration.
Connor has no right coming up to 55. There's no way he's not going to stand a chance. We're too big for him. We're too strong. So you can take your little English ass and get on.
You're too slow and too stiff. You're stiff as a board. I'd snap you in half. And that's it.
Yes.
I see stiffness when I look in that 155-pound division. Slow, stiff. I feel like they're stuck in the mud almost. The featherweights, they hit like flyweights. So it's nice down there just destroying them and killing that whole division. But I have my eye on that 155 division, and I see them all stuck in the mud in there. So we'll see over time. But guess what? Have I been wrong yet? Have I been wrong yet? No.
You have a monster right here at 45, Otto, about to beat your ass. You beat nobody, and you think you're going to come up to 155 make a statement? Come on, man. Sit down.
So I remember being in attendance when that happened. I was like, ooh, wow, this is interesting. But there's a lot in between them at this point. Cerrone was getting ready for RDA, Conor Aldo, so many fights in between. The one thing I don't like about the fight that was announced on January 18th, I don't love that it's happening at 170. I think Conor is at his best at 155, and I think Cerrone's at his best at 155. And I wish that we could go back to that clip because they're talking about 155. But I think this is part of the the thinking, all right, 170, maybe next, Masvidal or Diaz, they're 170 years. Okay, I get it. I don't love it. I don't feel like he's as on point at 170, but fine. All right, we'll take it. And so I loved that then. I thought it was fine. What I didn't like, if you recall, all of you may have forgotten this, what I didn't like was back in January when he beat Alex Hernandez, and all of a sudden, Donald Cerrone was almost like begging for this fight. I like that Donald Cerrone, who was calling him out, who was saying, you were a bum, you don't deserve to even be talking about fighting us. Do you remember back in January when I talked about, you know, Cerrone being too nice about this whole situation? That's why he doesn't like me. That's why he's mad at me. Let me remind you all what I said back in January. Here's the clip from Ariane the Bad Guy.
I am in with a caveat, Chael. I am in if Donald Cerrone goes back to the Donald Cerrone that we saw at that press conference several years ago, around 3.5 years ago. I am not in, Chael, if we get the Cowboy Cerrone who was talking on the microphone after his win over Alexander Hernandez on Saturday night. Connor, if you'd give me a chance, please give me the honor of fighting you. What is that all about, Cowboy? When you first met Conor McGregor at that press conference, you were calling him a bum. You were saying he was overhyped. You were saying he was a nobody. Now it's like, you see that interview with Brett? Go back to that interview with Brett. He said, I'm living in Conor's world. You're living in Conor's world, Donald Cerrone? You're the winningest fighter in UFC history. He's living in your world. Stop acting like he's some god. I don't want to see a Cowboy Cerrone who's going to be kissing Conor McGregor's butt. No, that's not interesting to me. That is completely boring. I don't want to see that kind of respect. I want to see a guy who doesn't respect Conor, who's going to say that you are overhyped, that I'm going to take all the air out of that balloon, and I'm going to end you and rid you of this weight class. You are out of here. You're out of this promotion. All that stuff that he was saying, he looked great on Saturday. But afterwards, he completely killed my buzz for that fight, Chael, because he's giving him too much respect, and quite frankly, he's coming across as weak.
Now, I am convinced Cerrone has never actually watched that clip. I'm convinced that the same casuals who, you know, go on my clips and cut things off and take them out of context have sent it to him and said that I was disparaging him. Because if he would actually listen to that, I was saying, no, Cerrone, you are the winningest fighter in UFC history. Stop acting like he's living you're living in his world. He's actually living in your world. And you notice ever since this fight was announced or even a possibility of becoming a reality, that rhetoric is gone. So he may not like me, he may be mad at me, but the truth is, I believe deep down he listened to me, because you don't hear that anymore. You don't hear the, you know, please fight me, please give me this opportunity. You don't hear that from him even after the fight was made official. And so I like this. I like that there's a backstory. Okay, there's a little respect shown. That's fine. But this whole thing of like, please do me the honor. No, the winningest fighter in UFC history does not need to say that. No way. You have done enough. You have earned that respect. You have earned that fight. You have earned that right. Donald Cerrone has earned this. He has earned this opportunity. And if you're Conor McGregor, this is the perfect fight to get back on track with. Y'all can say whatever you want. You can make the memes. You can make the clips. You can do whatever you want. I am right here. And any one of you that don't understand that or don't want to acknowledge that, you just don't get the fight game. You don't understand how it works. This man has not won since November of 2016. Get that through your little heads. Hasn't fought since October of 2018. You want him to jump back in there? The only ones who are saying that are the ones who want to see him combust, who want to see him go down in flames. I just want to see a great fight. And the realist in me understands that if you want to see a great fight right now involving Conor McGregor, this is the kind of fight that he should be in. Next, get by this one. All right, let's talk about Gaethje. Let's talk about Masvidal. Let's talk about the Nate Diaz trilogy fight. Let's talk about Tony, whatever. But the first one, let's just ease back into this. So I like this. I think this is sensical. I think it's being a realist. I like it. I think they're smart with this one. It all makes sense. Now, the other fight that was announced, of course, the next day was Khabib versus Tony. And the only thing that I want to say about this one was the stuff at the beginning of last week with, like, you know, posting the contract and all that, that was hogwash. I'm happy that Tony's team met with the UFC brass later in the week. I'm happy he signed a contract. I'm happy he's happy, and I'm happy this fight is happening. The only thing I don't like about it is this fight's happening April 18th. That's like in 4.5 months. Why are we announcing it now? We just announced the Conor return fight a month and a half away. This one fight that we've tried to book 4 times in the past, this is going to be the 5th time, is happening in 4.5 months. Why are we announcing it? So that's just tempting the MMA gods. That's the only thing I don't like about this. This is a fight that I would have announced on April 17th, 16th, 15th, at the earliest. And so that makes me a little nervous, but I'm happy they got it done. And it really shapes up to be a great first quarter of 2020 for the UFC. The last pay-per-view of the year, by the way, UFC 245, December 14th, Las Vegas, three title fights. It's going to be great. I'm looking forward to that. I'm looking forward to getting back to Vegas. It's been a while. But the night before, I can officially announce that we will be having our second MMA roadshow this Friday, December 13th. So in essentially, what day is it today? The second? 11 days from right now. My math is bad. December 13th, 7 p.m. Pacific. The show will be at Jimmy Kimmel's Comedy Club at the Link Promenade. Jimmy Kimmel's Comedy Club at the Link Promenade, that's on the Strip. Tickets go on sale tomorrow, December 13th. That's Tuesday, December 13th at 1 p.m. Eastern on Ticketmaster. And the show will feature the second Helwani Knows Order Trivia Challenge. You may recall Stipe Miocic won the first. Now we're going with the second. Four new fighters going toe-to-toe UFC trivia. So tomorrow at around 1, I'm going to tweet the link where you can buy the tickets. I think the venue holds around 300 or so. We're going to give out prizes like last time. There'll be a meet and greet. It's going to be a great time. It'll be after the ceremonial weigh-ins. So if you are in Las Vegas for 245, or even if you're not going to 245, but you happen to be in the area, please come check it out. It's a great time. The first one in Chicago was a blast. Met a lot of you. I loved it. And now we're doing a second one. So I'm very excited for this. All right. So that's all the stuff that's going on right off the top. I think we got to most of it. Oh, let's do the poll while we're talking about Khabib and Connor and all that stuff. So what I want to know from you, and I have a feeling I know what the answer is going to be, but I want to know, I'm curious. Of the two main events that were announced last week, Connor Cerrone, January 18th, Khabib Ferguson, April 18th. Which one are you more looking forward to? If you had to pick one to watch, to attend, which one are you more looking forward to? Is it the Connor return fight or fifth time's a charm, Khabib Ferguson? Put it on the Twitter page, Corporate Jake, and at the end of the show, we shall revisit that poll. All right. Did we get all that out of the way? We got it all out of the way. And I will end with, you know, just stop being such big cynics. All right. Just enjoy life for once. Can you all just enjoy life for once? Why are you always so like negative? I mean, really, you make me sick. Some of you just enjoy life. Okay. You're killing me. You're absolutely killing me. I'm trying to turn a page. I'm trying to be more positive. And here you are just like, you know, killing my buzz. Oh, I'm trying to be more positive, maybe because my Buffalo Bills are atop the AFC East. Yeah, I know they're not really atop the AFC East, but they're going to be. They're 9-3, and they're about to unseat the New England Patriots. And if you're not down with that, I got two words for you. Now, let's go to our first guest of the day. I've wanted to have this man on the program for quite some time, and it's about time we have him on. He is killing it over in Dallas, Texas. He is the founder and owner of Fortis MMA. He's the head coach over there. He's the great Saif Saud. I went through the lineup. If you want to hear it again, here's some of the notables that train out of that gym: Diego Ferreira, Steven Peterson, Alex Morono, Ryan Spahn, Jeff Neal, Miles Johns, Charles Byrd, Alonzo Menafield, Kennedy Nzechukwu, Macy Chazon, Uriah Hall, and on it goes. There he is, Saif Saud, making his debut on the program. Saif, how are you, my friend?
Good. How are you doing, sir?
I'm doing great. Congratulations on a great year, and congratulations on all the success that the team and the gym has had. Let's take a step back. Let's have a bit of a history lesson here for those that may have heard us talk about the team and the gym, but may not know, you know, the real history. When did Fortis MMA start?
Well, I started Fortis in 2017. I had been coaching for 10 years at another gym, really built up, you know, a lot of experience, ups and downs like everybody else, but everything just kind of came together perfectly. And it's been a great ride, not a very long ride, but a very fruitful one.
And you also were a pro fighter, right? I believe you were 3-0.
Yes, that's correct. I was 3-0, trained at Jackson's for 3 years, lived in Albuquerque, New Mexico with the aforementioned Donald Cerrone and crew, and punch each other in the face every day, and learn so much from Greg Jackson, and Mike Van Arsdale was my wrestling coach, and on and on, and gained tons of experience from that, and it's helped me tremendously in coaching.
Why'd you stop after three fights?
I tore my bicep.
Oh no! Oh my gosh! Holy smokes!
Gnarly. Tore my ACL, tore my meniscus. I mean, it just kept going and going. So at 28, I just knew that my body just wasn't gonna maintain itself. And my whole goal was to get to be 5-0 and then just fight once in the UFC, go to that level and achieve that, and then open a gym. My lifelong dream has always been to open a gym. I've been teaching my whole life. My dad owns a dojo. My brother's a PhD. I just think that's kind of our family's thing. So I'm just kind of trying to carry the tradition on.
By the way, didn't you recently tear your bicep as well? Was it the same one?
No, that was actually my lat.
So oh.
I've had so many injuries. My body, I always tell people durability is a skill that you can't train for. And durability is not a skill that I had. I mean, every fighter likes to remember themselves as being so great. Yeah, I was pretty good. You fight 10 fights, especially in the UFC, you're going to lose one. So I'll be proud of that 3-0 record. And, you know, I got what I needed from it, the experience to coach and I think understand what it's like to walk to that cage and hear that door lock and all the emotions that go with that. And that's really what I'm grateful for now.
And by the way, where's your family from? Where's that name from?
So I'm Iraqi. I'm Iraqi and a little bit of Persian in there too. So that's why my wrestling is so good. I've got that Middle Eastern background, got those good hips.
I respect it.
Yeah.
And why did you open the gym in Dallas?
Well, I came to Dallas after I got hurt. I had to try to figure out how I was going to make money. I didn't know how I was going to make money. And, you know, I was with my wife. We didn't have kids yet. And I had a bunch of sponsors here in town. And I knew that I could at least come and train them. And what happened was one of them wanted to do some jiu-jitsu. So he asked me to go to a local gym that had just opened up. And I walked in and the owner just got lucky, really. He said, hey, you know, do you have any MMA experience? And I said, well, I just left, you know, the best camp in the world. It was definitely the best camp in the world then. And it's still a great camp. And I said, sure. And so he said, I can't pay you, but, you know, if you can build a program up, well, then we can start there. So it started one day a week and then three and then five. And then one thing led to another. And 10 years later, we are here now with 15 fighters in the UFC and an 18-5 record in 2019.
And why Fortis? What does that mean?
So I wanted a name that meant something. I'm not big on naming stuff after myself. I think it's a little egotistical. Personally, it's just kind of weird to me. I don't know. I get it. I mean, people are proud of their name or they want to brand it or whatever. But I wanted something that meant something. And Fortis in Latin, it means courageous and strength. You know, fortitude comes from that word Fortis, that root Latin word. So, and it's clean. It's simple. I wanted something that was clean and simple and that could be said easily and was, you know, the logo too. I put some work into, so it turned out really well.
And one of your partners is former NBA great Deron Williams, correct?
Correct.
How did you link up with him?
I started training Deron about 4 years ago when he was still playing. And, you know, Deron loves MMA. And I mean, the guy knows MMA in and out. You know, people always say, you know, I'm an MMA fan. I mean, Deron, you know, he amazed me with his such an intelligent guy. And he amazed me with just his passion for the game and understanding it. And man, he honestly can really fight too. And, you know, maybe we'll get him in there one day. I don't know. But when he came to me and said, hey, you know, I want in on this thing, I was happy to do it because, you know, he really is a guy that loves MMA and that train. And we'd go up there and roll every day and train every day. And you know, you want to have partners that have passion, and Deron has that passion for the sport. And, he's been such a great partner, and he's a dear friend as well. So it's been fantastic.
I remember prior to UFC 211 in Dallas, I believe the gym had just opened. You had a lot of the media there for like an open workout session, and because Rashad Coulter was about to fight, and we got to check out the gym, and you showed us the gym. That's kind of when it opened, like a couple of years ago, correct?
Yeah, you were there.
Yeah, I was there.
We had been open for probably about 4 months.
Okay.
We had no fighters in the UFC, and Rashad had that slobber knocker with Chase Sherman,
right,
fight of the night, and it was in Dallas, and it was great. You know, all of our students win, and it's crazy to think about. That was only a few years ago, but you know, everybody's been on the grind and everybody's been moving, and just like anything else, you know, 10 years of work, and it's starting to show the surface now. So I'm just really happy for all these athletes that have been putting in that grind for the last 6 or 7 years and now starting to get the spotlight.
So my question is, when did you start to feel like you guys were onto something here with this team, when you guys were turning the corner? Because now This is one of the great stories of 2019. You guys have emerged as one of the up-and-coming gyms, one of the up-and-coming camps. You're getting a lot of attention. When did you start to feel? Was it a moment? Was it a fight? Was it a sequence of events where you start to feel like, all right, we're actually onto something here?
Yeah, I try not to immerse myself in that type of thought process, Ariel, just because as a coach and a leader, I always got to have my eyes down the road. We've had a lot of big moments this year. But I think that overall, you know, having guys like Uriah Hall, guys that have been all over the world wanting to come and train here and saying, hey, this is, you know, the best camp I've ever been to. You guys have so many things, you know, that I've never experienced. I mean, you know, that those are huge compliments. And so I think that, you know, probably towards the end of this year, things have really kind of kicked in and realizing that, you know, we are looked at as one of the major camps, and it's definitely a dream come true.
And so now you have this momentum and people are talking about you, and perhaps there's, I don't want to say a bullseye, but like you're not the little engine that could anymore. You guys are actually, you know, you're a force. Am I wrong? Do you feel otherwise? Do you still feel like you're that?
No, that's great. I mean, I've always felt that, you know, I think that, you know, the thing that makes the gym special is these guys are all so determined and they're kind of rising up together, right?
Not
one individual, but the whole team is becoming one of the biggest teams in the world and one of the best and has the best record in the UFC. So it's kind of a cool thing to watch everybody do it together. It's just a little bit of a different feel than watching one person ascend, you know, to a high level while others fall. It's just been super unique and a blessing that, you know, is something that we don't take for granted. Every day we're going in there and working and we're taking no days off. And, you know, we got a long way to go until we win a belt or a few, you know. There's really nothing to say, right? There's more can always be done, and that's what we're trying to do.
Are you sensing that kind of pride, that togetherness from the team? Do you hear guys talking about that as opposed to, as you said, like one guy emerging and maybe bringing the team along with them? Are you like, after the Monday after a big fight, do you sense a bit of a pep in the step? Are people getting together to watch the fights? Does it feel like an actual team to you?
Absolutely. I mean, I think that the team has a certain mindset. And to be honest, it's just a winning culture. And right now winning is the expectation, and everybody's pushing each other. You know how it is. I mean, we've had multiple streaks. We were 16-4 last year and 18-5 this year. So, I mean, you know, you don't want to be one of the people that's dropping one of those fights, and it's okay. You know, it happens in this game. It's very volatile, but it's kind of a group effort. You know, no one wants to drop the ball. And that's how winning happens. You know, you create that culture and it's an expectation. So I think that's really what I've seen out of the team more than anything, is that expectation of winning, not only for themselves, but for each other. And you know, sure enough, it starts to happen, you know, just like you were talking, just like your Buffalo Bills.
That's right, baby.
If a team wins enough, right, that's their expectation. It's not an expectation for them to oh, hey, wow, we won. The expectation is to win. And now what's the next expectation? The playoffs. And then, hey, AFC championship, let's not get carried away, but you know exactly what I'm talking about.
That's right. That's right. Now, you know, one thing that I love about watching events at home, as opposed to actually being there, it's a great privilege to be there. But when you're at home, one of the best parts is you can hear the dialogue in between rounds. And honestly, I'm not just saying it because you're here. I think you're one of the best at knowing who you're talking to, motivating that particular fighter, saying the right thing. Sometimes you listen to the corners, you're like, that's it? Like, I know you only have a minute in there, but like, I mean, I feel like you can offer something. Could you tell us where you developed that style, where you got your voice from? Is it from other coaches that you had? Did you develop this over time? Because really, I urge people to go back through Fight Pass or ESPN Plus and look at how you work the corner. It's really impressive in between those rounds.
Well, thank you very much. I mean, that's a huge compliment. It's probably the biggest compliment you can pay a coach. I think it's, you know, the most important job of a coach is how do you get your athlete through that war? You know, I mean, it doesn't matter how hard you've trained and how much work you've put in. And we all know everyone works hard. No one just shows up at UFC, contracted fighter of the UFC, and hasn't worked hard. But how do you guide them through that war and get them the desired result so they can move their chips forward, right? So they can continue to grow as an athlete, make more money, on and on and on, get another contract. So I take it very seriously. And I think that, honestly, I think that having all these athletes homegrown we've been through so much together. I mean, we just have real conversations. You know, if you're sucking, man, and you're about to lose, I'm going to let you know. If you're doing great, hey, I'm going to let you know. But you've got 60 seconds there to communicate and be effective. And I think it's just sometimes saying the things that nobody wants to say. You know, people give me a lot of credit sometimes, but I just say it like it is. I mean, if that's a skill, maybe that's it. But that goes a long way. And, you know, fighting isn't a game, right? It's not something where you can be sensitive, especially in the corner. Like, you know, hey, how you feeling? You know, hey, blah, blah, blah. Like, that's not my deal. I like to be real specific, give specific instructions, go back on the game plan. And if somebody's not doing something right, you need to let them know. And, you know, lots of people are motivated by direction, you know, by very direct, hey, get this done, do this, do that. A lot of fighters are motivated by that. Some are not, as you alluded to. Some you need to, you know, come at them in a different way. But I try not to ask questions. I'll reinforce things, but, you know, they need to know that you're the leader. They need to know that you know how to get them to win. And sometimes, man, it comes down to that. You know, it's a 5 or 10% game in there. And if you can be that 5 or 10%, you know, you need to get it done. So I appreciate that compliment. It's a big one, and it's something that I do take very seriously.
One thing that we've been talking about a lot this year, and I think it's one of the main differences between MMA and boxing, it's that in boxing there seems to be this culture where it's okay to, quote-unquote, throw in the towel. There's a couple of notable examples in MMA. Trevor Whitman has been a part of a couple of them where he just talks to the fighter and he's like, we can't do this. We need to stop. Have you ever been in that position, and how difficult is that position to be in?
I've been in it one time, and it was actually an LFA, and I had the towel in my hand. And it's the only time I've ever had it in my hand. And it was very difficult, very difficult. And the fighter that won ended up going to the UFC as a world champion, a great fighter, a great guy. And I had a young kid in there who beat him in the first round. But this guy is a BJJ world champion. And he got him on the ground and he had him mounted. And I'll never forget those elbows he was dropping on him. I mean, his head had nowhere to go. He was against the fence. And he had taken some damage, but not a lot. But I knew he wasn't going to get out. I knew it. I knew he wasn't going to get out. And that's when I grabbed the towel, because what's the point? I mean, what I've done with some other fighters who get hit a lot, and they know who they are. I've told them, I said, if you go in there and you know, you're getting hit a lot and you keep on bleeding and doing all this and all that, I said, make no mistake about it. I said, I'll throw in the towel. I said, I'm huge on damage. You know, I love MMA. Hey, it's great. I care a lot more about my kids than I care about a fight. And I tell them that, you know, don't act like this is the biggest deal in the world. This is what we're all doing right now, but this isn't forever. So I've warned people before, you know, hey, if you take a lot of damage, I'm going to throw in the towel. And it never came to fruition. And you never want people to doubt your fighters to doubt your faith in them. But again, it goes back to communicating effectively and being honest. So I haven't had to do it yet, but you're damn straight I'll do it. And, you know, to call it heroic, you know, Trevor Whitman's just an awesome coach.
Yeah.
You listen to him when he does the commentating, he's so great because he never insults anybody.
Yes.
To your point, right? Yeah. Someone will go in there and be like, I don't know what the hell to do. Hit him, you know, hit him with an elbow. And Trevor's like, well, I wouldn't go say it that way. But yeah. Instead of being like, what the hell are you talking about? That's terrible coaching. He never does that. So. He's a great example of that, but I don't even know if you should get credit for it. It's your job. You know, you're the coach, you're the boss, and I don't care who else is in the corner. You're running that corner. That's why it says who's the chief second. You know, that's you, and you got to make those decisions. And, you know, I never try to judge other coaches because this is a hard game. And, you know, I've been asked about to comment on certain situations, and I've said no comment, and I'll continue to do that and just talk about what I would do.
Now, I was very jealous of the fact that a couple of weeks ago on your Instagram, I saw that you were hanging with my guy, Kristaps Porzingis, the unicorn stolen from us. In Dallas. I know he's a big MMA fan. Did you actually train with him? What happened here? Tell us. Look how huge he is.
You know, Kristaps is in season aerial, so we're going to just leave that.
Okay.
Know, a little bit. We'll say that he did some basketball exercises and you know, maybe a little shadow boxing, but let me tell you something. This guy's a huge MMA fan. He's a huge Errol Hawani fan.
Oh,
And
what?
He said, that's my guy. I DM him. I talked to him. I said, yeah, he's, and he's, what a great guy. And me and him made a bet. He knows what the bet is.
Oh.
We made a bet this season. And when I started training him, they were 7-5. And I told him, I said, our MMA record is 18-5. I said, you guys need to get your record to 18-5. Well, since then, they're 13-6. And they just smashed the Lakers last night.
Yep.
So I send him these little clips that I see on ESPN, him getting an alley-oop from Luka or whatever. And we have a cool little banter going on. But what a great dude. And 7-3 and a strong guy. I can tell you that. He's a strong, coordinated guy. Great dude.
I'd love to see him use that reach in there. I mean, that would be incredible. Now let's
he's got that reach.
He does. Shall we address the elephant in the room? You and your fighters, some of them are mad at me because I didn't put you on my list, the short list, the very, very short list. I was just talking about a specific thing with Eric and Eugene Behrman, Eric Albarracin, and you guys were mad that I didn't include you. Do you feel like I'm not being fair here by including you? I'll tell you the reasons once again. They have multiple UFC champions. You noted this, right? Am I being unfair? Tell me why. I'll take it. I'm a man. Am I being unfair?
Here's the thing. You know, for a coach to lobby for his own award,
yes,
it's kind of classless. You know what I mean? You don't see Bill Belichick out there going, hey, you know what? I'm the best coach. Like, it's just kind of classless. What I will say is that I don't know any other team that's won that many fights in 2 years, and I don't know any other team that has 15 fighters that all from zero to the UFC. I don't know that other team that has those kind of win streaks. Jeff Neal, 4-0, first welterweight. Carlos Diego, 5-0, fighting Anthony Pettis. Ryan Spann, 3-0. Alonzo Menafield. I mean, Ryan Spann's fighting. It's 3-0, fighting OSP, who's got, this will be his 21st MMA fight. So it does go back to titles, though. You know, I get it. And yeah, look, you got to do your best and you got to cover what people want to hear about. You know, I always tell people this. Nobody cares. If you're not a star, nobody cares. Hell, there's people that don't give a shit about hearing me right now. Nobody cares, you know, and that's fine. So what do I tell them? Win a belt and then defend it and then defend it again and then defend it again. And guess what? People are going to start caring. There's nothing you can say about guys like John Jones. He's been there, man, you know, and, you've got to give these guys their respect who win the belt. It's such a hard thing. So, look, I'm never going to talk about any other coach. I'm never going to talk about any other team. I don't feel like I need to lobby. I feel like stats are great. And hopefully I get the nose award at the end of the year.
Well, you guys are killing it. You don't need my award. You're killing it. The numbers speak for themselves. 18-5.
We want the nose award.
I feel you.
We want the nose award.
I feel you.
Well, it's important to us.
All right, fair enough. Well, you got a big one coming up on December 14th, Jeff Neal against Mike Perry. It seems like almost every week you have big ones. And it's one of the great stories, like I said, of 2019 and of last year as well, the rise of your team in a very short amount of time. So keep doing your thing, my man. Congratulations on all the success. Congrats to all your fighters as well. And keep working the corner like you're working, because that in particular has me really impressed. I just love the way you speak to the fighters. It's really a breath of fresh air. So congrats on everything. And please tell my friend Kristaps that I say hello as well.
I will tell him that.
All right.
No problem, Mario.
Thank you, Saif. There he is. Saif Saoud, the head coach, the founder, the owner of Fortis MMA out of Dallas, Texas. They're doing amazing things out of there. And if you don't know, now you know. You should recognize what they are doing. There's ATT and Jackson Wink and TriStar, all those places. But we need to start talking about them in that same regard as well as one of the top gyms in MMA. Now, let's go from one of the top gyms to one of the best fighters, period, on the planet, regardless of gender. She returns February 8th in Houston, a place she knows a thing or two about. She is the reigning defending UFC women's flyweight champion. She is the great Valentina Shevchenko, who's joining us from where is this? The Performance Institute in Las Vegas, Valentina?
Hello, Ariel. Yes, it's exactly right place. It's UCPI in Las Vegas. We just finished our training.
Oh my God, you're such a mensch. You did your training and now you're doing the interview from the mats. I appreciate it very much. Thank you for that, Valentina.
<Of course. laughs>
So we have to address the big question right off the bat, the question everyone wants to know the answer to. It's the most important question. Why did you change your hair color?
It was not my idea at first. It was the idea of Halle Berry, because the character in movie what I'm playing should have red hair. So she came up with this idea. I agreed because for me it looks like it has to be for this kind of change for the movie. So that's why I'm with this color right now.
Wow. So you're in that Halle Berry movie?
Yes, I am.
And what's your part? Could you tell us?
I'm her opponent.
What? That's incredible. And have you finished filming it?
My part, yes, we did. We did finish. We had for about 1 month and a half, almost 2 months of training together. Then we went and filmed my part. And now they're like continue with movie filming. And I think it's going to last probably like a couple of months or months more.
Do you know when it comes out?
Not yet, but I hope it's going to be soon because I'm so excited to see it.
Yeah, I bet. And do you know what it's called?
It's called Bruised.
Bruised. And are
Bruised
there
the movie, yeah.
Are there other MMA fighters in it? Pro MMA fighters?
I don't think so. But I could say after all these years of training, because Hailey, she was trained MMA like years, 2 or 3 years before filming starts. So now we can say definitely she's a professional fighter as well.
And how did you get this opportunity? Did you try out or did they come to you?
They come to me, they contacted me, Hailey contacted me, and here we are.
Wow, that is amazing. I can't wait to see this. And do you have a speaking part in the movie or just fighting?
Yes, fighting, speaking, everything that I
oh my gosh.
To do, I did.
Valentina the actress. I had no idea that this was something you were doing. That's great. Well, I look forward to that. I'm a big fan of Halle Berry, as I think the entire world is. So I'm looking forward to seeing how she actually looks in there as a fighter and how the fight sequences play out. This is MMA, right?
Yes, it's a movie about MMA and women MMA, and it's all about how a person struggling with their own fears, but MMA and sport, it's helping to fight it and become a better person. So I think it's going to be great. Very excited for this one.
Now, since the filming for you is over, are you going to bleach your hair back to blonde or are you going to keep it this way?
I'm going to keep it for a while. Because looks like everybody likes it.
Okay.
So I'm going to stay with this color for, I don't know yet for how long, but I'm going to stay with it.
You're going to keep it for the fight on February 8th?
I'm going to keep it for the fight on February 8th.
Are you superstitious? I mean, you've had such a great career with the famous blonde hair. Are you superstitious about changing something as drastic as that?
You know, for me, the most important, it's how myself I'm gonna feel me. I'm gonna feel for the fight. And if I do everything exactly the same, doesn't matter what hair color, what clothing, whatever, it doesn't help. Only help in the real fight is your preparation and how you mentally, physically ready for the fight. This is the bigger superstitions because this is the most important.
I like that. Yes, 100%.
Details note.
So you're fighting Caitlin Chookagian February 8th in Houston. When you were offered this fight against Caitlin, what did you think? Was this a fight that intrigued you?
This fight was up in the air like for about probably a year when I had to fight for the very, very first time in Texas for the belt. She was in Dallas in that time. As well, and I know she like a couple of times she was posting on her Twitter that I'm ready just in case if something happened, I will be here and I'm ready to step into the octagon and take a fight. But it happened, and we was needed replacement, and I call her via Twitter saying Caitlin, let's do it now, but she said, oh, it's too late, it's like something like this, I don't remember already, but from that moment it's already was some kind of I was ready that someday we're gonna fight together, and it's happening right now 1 year after. So we are gonna fight in February 8th in Houston, and I think it's excellent timing and excellent location for the fight.
Yeah, I had heard that there was some talk of it happening maybe in Abu Dhabi. right? And then maybe even in Australia to have you fight. But I think the movie was a scheduling conflict, right? So you guys have been circling each other for quite some time. And so I'm wondering if you've been impressed with her, because you've been able to watch her. She's been on your radar. Are you impressed with what you see when you see her fight?
Yeah, and you know, before I fought Liz Carmouche, I was supposed to fight her, but she had her bidding. That's why it didn't happen that time as well. Yeah, and now we have like new date. And yes, I saw her fight. I never was like too much paying attention on her performances, because she never was like the opponent number one for me, because it was every time, you know me, I have my opponent number one and I ready for this kind of opponent. I was preparing for Jessica and for Liz Carmouche. Of course, I look for other girls' fights and how they have their like everything, but it's never paying too much attention. But now it's time to pay a lot of attention in her like fighting style, and I think everything's gonna be good.
You know, she has 6 wins in the UFC. All of those wins are via decision, and at times people have criticized her for not engaging enough, for not bringing the fight to the opponent, for the fights not being very entertaining, shall we say. Your last fight, a similar situation played out, although Caitlin's a very different fighter than Liz Carmouche, but it was frustrating at times because it felt like the fight wasn't being brought to you and it wasn't a very fan-friendly fight. Are you at all concerned that the same type of thing will play out once again when you fight, and that it will become a sort of theme that will reflect poorly on you and your fighting style?
You know, I see her style a little bit, not completely, but a little bit similar to Holly Holm's style, like fighting on a distance, having her distance. And I think no one was complaining about my fight with Holly. Everybody was liked it. So I think it's going to be good. Yes, every opponent, every fighter, every person, they have a different fight style, different power, strength. And we cannot compare Liz Carmouche and Caitlin, because they are having totally different fight style, totally different tricks, and totally like everything different. That's why from my side, I'm gonna do good preparation. I will prepare for the fight in my every time as I do 100%. And of course, we'll be waiting opportunity, and when opportunity will come, I will do everything to finish the fight as soon as I can. But for sure, I will do my best to win the fight and hold my belt.
That experience in Uruguay against Liz Carmouche, did that stick with you? You know, the boos and the criticism afterwards, even though it does take two to tango, is that something you think about a lot and try not to be a part of a fight like that again?
No, I never, you know, that I never think about what happened before, but because it's already happened. I had great fights there. And if you can take a look at the fight, it was very technical fight. And I had several knockdowns in this fight. I had very beautiful knockdown from back fist, but she went down and starting to shoot into the leg, and people were thinking that she is trying to shoot to the leg, and because probably it was too fast for them and they could not see the actual hit. I don't know, but if you remember, of course I understand why people was expecting, because coming from second round KO, head kick KO, everyone was expecting the same. But as I say every time, all people are different. Everyone, you cannot just order KO and make it like every time, every time. Of course, people, they're expecting every time KO, but it doesn't happen if you just like, okay, I will do it in first round, in second round. No, you can prepare everything to make it happen, but you'd never know how the fight, actual fight, will turn out.
I remember after that fight, you extended the challenge to Henry Cejudo about the whole intergender thing. And then you saw him not that long after, and he completely like crumbled under the pressure, right? Didn't you see him in like, I think you were maybe at an event a couple weeks later, and didn't he just like turtle up and, you know, kind of cower to you after all that talk? That's what happened, correct? Wasn't that disappointing?
What disappointing. We had our, like, in Abu Dhabi, we had our, like, minutes in fight, and you saw I choked him out.
Yes.
So I get my victory. I get my victory.
So you're the intergender champion.
Looks like, yes.
I've noticed since then he doesn't say anything about it anymore.
Yeah, because he's, like, a real fighter. He has to accept his, like, his lose via rear naked choke.
Well, what about fighting in Houston? I know you don't live there anymore, but you spent a lot of time there. Does that mean anything special to you?
Of course. We lived in Houston for 2.5 years. And as I say every time, all this like cowboy culture I accumulate so good, it's so deep inside me that I am very happy to come back to Houston to see all my old friends and just to breathe the air and spend like good times there, have a good fight. I fought for two times I fought in Houston when I fought in Legacy Organization. And now I'm going back there with UFC, and it's very exciting. And, of course, it's something that motivates me so much. And as I say, I will be there in my best shape.
I know every time you fight, every time Amanda fights, especially when you guys are close, as far as when you fight, that talk comes back of you guys fighting each other eventually. Was there any talk before this? Because I remember after Jermaine Duranemi beat Aspen Ladd and you beat Liz Carmouche, there seemed to be not a lot of buzz for an opponent for both you and her, and there were some people trying to push the idea of maybe you do the trilogy now, and then others were saying maybe it's a little too soon, you just won the 125 belt. Was there ever any talk before these fights got set for both you and Amanda of doing that trilogy right now?
Right now, no, because as I told, for now, I am focused on defend my belt and to spend like time in my real weight class, to fight in my weight class without like fighting with someone bigger. But of course, in the future, of course, it's going to happen. And as I said, every time, it's not depends of me. It's not depend of her, not depend of no one. It's just going to happen. I don't know when, but when it's happened, it's happened.
Okay. This is something you want, just not really pushing for right now, correct?
Right now, I want to defend my belt, and I was waiting for this moment like a long time. Every time I was fighting in 135, I had to manage and struggle to fight in with someone bigger, someone like different size of me. And now, finally, I have opportunity to show everything, all my potential in my weight class. Why I have to rush?
Yeah.
I will take everything like step by step. And when time it's come, it's going to be big, something big.
Do you agree with the notion that the gap between you and the rest of the contenders at 125 is bigger than any champion in any other weight class and the rest of the contenders in that weight class? That it's almost like when Demetrius Johnson was champion at 125 back in the day, that there's just a massive talent gap between you and the rest of the contenders. Not trying to put them down, but they just need to develop a little more. Do you feel that way right now?
I don't know. I don't think about it. I just think about my preparation to be better fighter every day, to not focus on something that I don't have to focus, and focus on every day to be better person, to be better like fighter. And this is what I'm thinking about. And of course, not only focus on training, because life passes. And we have not only like to do everything, to try to do everything, to enjoy our life. That's why I'm trying every time spend a lot of time on the nature, go to the shooting range, training my shooting skills, and go like boating when we're here in Las Vegas to the Lake Mead, and just trying to enjoy my life and spend it in best quality.
Are you doing your whole entire camp at the PI, or do you go to another gym as well?
We are now thinking about where it's going to happen, and I think in next couple of days I will know for sure.
Oh, where are you looking?
We are thinking about Thailand, Las Vegas, Houston, so many, many things around.
Okay, so maybe even outside of Las Vegas as well.
Probably, yes.
Okay, interesting. All right, well, I'm looking forward to your return February 8th, Houston, right under arguably the greatest John Jones against Dominic Reyes. So two title fights on that card, UFC 247. It's going to be great. Thank you, as always, Valentina, and especially after your training session. We really appreciate it, and good luck to you in training.
Thank you, Ariel. Thank you. Bye-bye.
All right. Talk to you soon. There she is, the Bullet, Valentina Shevchenko, the 125-pound women's champion, and she returns February 8th in Houston, Texas, Toyota Center, to be exact. All right. Let us move our attention now to a fight that's happening this weekend in Texas, Hidalgo, to be exact. A few weeks ago, we spoke to Tito Ortiz about this Combate Americas fight, their very first pay-per-view. Now we turn our attention to the man who will be fighting him this Saturday, December 7th. It will be Combate Americas' first ever pay-per-view, like I said. It will be a fight where essentially Tito is putting his UFC title on the line, and his opponent, Alberto Rodriguez, Alberto Del Rio, Alberto El Patron, Dos Caras Jr. will be putting his WWE Championship online. And there he is, the man himself, who will be making his return to mixed martial arts competition for the first time since 2010, the one and only Alberto El Patron. Alberto, how are you, my friend?
I'm good, my friend. Thank you for that introduction. That was fantastic. Thank you for having me, Amir.
It's a pleasure, as always. By the way, I just want to make clear off the bat, is it Alberto El Patron? Is that the name now?
Well, Alberto El Rio is my real name. It's just, you know, some people like to call me Alberto El Patron because El Patron nickname was given by the fans. But, I mean, Alberto Rodriguez, Alberto El Patron, Alberto El Rio, my full, you know, we have long names in Latin America. José Alberto Del Rio Rodriguez, that's my
yes.
full name.
All right, so we'll go for these purposes on the show. We'll go with Alberto El Patron. Could you tell us when this idea first came about? Because I, you know, we knew that you were sort of, you know, a face for Combate. You were promoting them. You were helping the team, Campbell, McLaren, whatnot. But the idea of you actually returning to active competition to fight a guy like Tito Ortiz, a Hall of Famer, when did that first start?
Well, it started like 10 months ago when I talked to Campbell, McLaren, and I said, amigo, I'm ready to fight one more time, one last time. And of course, I want to do it here in Combate Americas to continue helping the company and to continue growing. And then after that, we started looking for opponents because that was my one and one condition only. I wanted to face someone important, someone irrelevant, someone with a name. Because based on my position in the company, I could have faced anyone, but I didn't want that. I wanted something with a meaning to continue inspiring or leading with the example and helping the company somehow. And after looking through different names, we saw that Tito was not under contract with any company. And that's when I said, hey, Camo, Tito Ortiz will be the perfect guy for me.
Okay, so it's one thing to fight a name, and I know Tito is older these days, but has still looked good in his last few fights, and a Hall of Famer. Like, why not fight someone, you know, maybe a little lower level, and then Tito Ortiz? Why jump back after 10 years away almost and fight Tito?
Yeah, I mean, it's because I'm doing one fight and one fight only. Again, I'm doing this for the right reasons or for the reasons that I think or I know that are going to be helping the company and helping me and helping these Latino Mexican fighters in our organization to grow. And Tito is Mexican American, just like me. He's a great wrestler. I'm a great wrestler. I know who Tito is and what Tito represents for the sports of MMA. But I know I'm ready. In the moment I said I want to face Tito, I did it knowing that I can win this fight, and that's exactly what I'm going to be doing. In Hidalgo, Texas, this Saturday.
And when you told Campbell that you wanted to return, what was the reason for that return? What sparked that, all of a sudden saying, you know what, I want to actually fight again?
Well, there's many reasons. Some people know this, some other people don't, but I went through a difficult time during my divorce, in that nightmare of a battle that was my for the custody of my children. And Campbell McLaren and the entire organization was there for me. They were there helping me, supporting me. It was a difficult moment in my life, and Campbell and the rest of the Combat America familia were there to fight that battle shoulder to shoulder with me. In my philosophy of life, I think you have, or I know you have to pay loyalty with loyalty. And when we put that, those bad moments or that not such a good time behind, I started thinking, how can I help the company? How can I help or repay all these people that was there for me in those difficult moments? And it immediately came to my head, and I said, I'm going to fight one more time. I'm going to do one last fight to retire from the MMA world and also help the company continue inspiring or leading with example to all of these Latino fighters fighting for our organization. And also, I'm not going to lie, the money on the table was really good because, of course, we start doing this for the passion and the love. But after so many years, you have to be rewarded after,
sure,
after jumping back in the cage or fighting in the cage.
What are we talking? Seven figures here? What are we paying you?
It's a good amount of money.
It's good.
I'm happy. I'm happy for everything. I'm happy for Combate America's success. I'm happy because we're giving the first pay-per-view in history to this organization. The money is good. I'm feeling good. I'm feeling like after I put all of that, those bad moments behind, I started feeling hungry again, and like Rocky Balboa said in the last Rocky movie, I needed to take the beast out of the basement, and that's what I've been doing in Arizona with my training camp. I gave it all. I trained hard like never before, and I feel completely ready. I wish the fight was tomorrow, because I feel completely ready. I know who Tito Ortiz is, but I can't wait to put my fist in his face, because you know I'm done with all the talking and all the crap that he has been saying for pretty much the beginning of this promotion for the fight. But we're 6 days away, and I can't wait to go there and kick his trasero.
So you're 42 years young. How did the body hold up after a training camp like that? At any point where you're like, oh gosh, I didn't expect this kind of grueling punishment on my body?
Oh yeah, since day number one. I mean, right after I went back to the gym, because I have always been in shape, but as you know, it's a total different thing to be in fighting shape. And the first week training with athlete 20 years younger than me, of course, everything hurt. My eyebrows, my hair, my muscles, my everything. But then little by little, I started feeling better, to be faster, stronger. My reflexes and everything, they started to come back, and I started feeling better. And that's what was motivating me and pushing me forward to continue with this, to the point where I decided to move from San Antonio to Arizona to do this training camp, because I could have easily stayed at home in San Antonio in my comfort zone, but that would have not ever do anything for me or help me. And that's why I went to Arizona, and I had the opportunity to train with those amazing athletes, Javier Torres, Ibi Dolloway, Ryan Bader. And I mean, I want to say thanks to all of them one more time for putting the time and passing their knowledge, and they're giving me their time to get me ready for this fight.
Does it bother you when people joke, oh, is this fight a work or a shoot? Is it going to be scripted? You know, people have brought this up. Even my partner, Chael Sonnen, has brought this up. Does that bother you, those insinuations?
Completely, completely. It bothers me. I think it's pretty stupid for someone like him to say stuff like that, because we have two individuals, two athletes, two Mexican-Americans working their ass off for this promotion, for this fight, to promote the fight, to do this fight. And when it comes to me coming out of retirement and leaving my kids in San Antonio, leaving my house in San Antonio and moving to a place to go and train every day, to kick ass and get my ass kicked every single day, because as you know, that's the hard part of fighting, the training camp, because you go there for 10, 12, 20 weeks, whatever it is, to put your body on the line and to push your limits and to improve and get better. Get ready for the fight. The fight is 15 minutes, three rounds of 5 minutes each, but behind that, it's hours and hours of training and trading punches and kicks with your teammates. So for someone like Sonnen to come and say something like that is disrespectful. But, I mean, it is what it is. We always going to have the supporters and the haters. That's the name of the game. I don't really care about that anymore. I'm not bothered by that anymore. I'm just focused on going this Saturday to McAllen, Texas, and be in front of Tito and just put him in his place and punch him in the face.
And by the way, why put it on pay-per-view? First one for Combates, there's a lot on pay-per-view these days. There's a lot of competition. That particular night is a busy one in combat sports, UFC, Ruiz, Joshua, too. Why the decision to put it on pay-per-view?
Well, we had the opportunity to do that, and as a company, it puts us it's putting us in a different place. We're not only putting it on pay-per-view. That's for here for America, but we're also doing business to have this. We also sold the rights to have this fight to other countries in Latin America and also in Europe. It's just part of the business, as you know. These days, not just MMA, any sport. It's not just about the sport. You have to do those TV deals, those deals with sponsors. Because if you don't do it, there's no money for the fighters. There's no money to promote or have this kind of event.
Now, what about this idea with the belts? Like, obviously, you're not the WWE champion. He's not the UFC champion. What exactly is the stipulation here? Can you explain this to me?
Yes. Well, as you know, Tito is not a bright person. On this one, he had a fantastic idea, putting those titles on the line, even though we're not champions for those organizations anymore. He knows, and I understand the idea behind it. In order to get a title, regardless of the sport, boxing, MMA, wrestling, pro wrestling, or any other sport, you have to work your ass off. You have to put hours and hours of sweat, blood, and tears in order to accomplish those awards. So it's not so much about taking the belt. It's taking his legacy. It's taking his hours and hours of sweat, blood, and tears, and all the hard work that these athletes put behind winning those titles. That was his idea. I think it's a terrific idea, and for me, it's going to be amazing to kick his ass and then take that UFC title and put it in my trophy room in my house in San Antonio.
The beef between you two guys, like, again, I don't want to ask is it real or not, but like, it seems like there is an issue there. Where does that stem from?
Well, I had no problems with him until that particular moment. I know we're professionals. We know we have to promote this fight, and you know, we were doing it in a peaceful way.
Yeah.
Yes, talking about the fight and what we're planning on doing and everything. But in that moment, I was not expecting him to do that. Some people in McAllen was telling me that he was like going crazy because I started firing back to him, because you know Tito always say the same stuff. It's like he has everything written on the palm of his hand, because he repeats the same stuff over and over and over. And in the moment you fire back with something different, he doesn't have the answer, because he doesn't have the brains to reply to anything you say.
Oh my.
So that was the moment when he lost his temper. And they said he was pushing people. He pushed me and started pushing people. I was okay. I was cool with him before that moment, but right after that, you know, he disrespected me in a different level. And when you don't even have to, I'm tired of those fights or those fighters promoting in a way where they know that nothing is going to happen, but this was not just part of the show or planned to heat up this fight. He did it for no particular reason. We're going to see each other in McAllen, Texas this Saturday, and that's the moment where we're going to be fighting. So if he wants to push me, if he wants to do whatever, he has to do it in the cage, because that's exactly what I'm going to be doing, not pushing him. I'm going to be kicking him, punching him in the face, and ready to end his career, because he's going to have to retire after this fight.
Now, are you telling me, like, let's say you win in 60 seconds. Still, you won't fight after this? This is it? Win, lose, or draw?
No, this is it. This is it, amigo. It's one and one only. Like I've been saying since day number one, I'm doing this for the right reasons. That was one of the questions that my father, my dad, the legendary Dos Caras, did to me. He asked me, why you're fighting for, boy? Because you know you have nothing to prove anymore. And I said, no, I don't have nothing to prove to anybody but to myself. I have to prove to myself that I'm still that fantastic athlete that I can continue doing what I've been doing since day number one, when I came to this amazing country, leading with the example, showing those Latinos, those Mexicans that the American dream is real. And if you work hard for it, your dreams will come true. And I'm the living proof of it.
What are the chances you actually bring back the mask, like the Pride days? Can you do that for me? Is there a chance that you'll actually fight with the mask?
I will do it for you, my friend.
Really?
I won't be fighting with the mask inside the cage. That was always really difficult for me to do when I was in Japan.
Yes.
Your vision is not the same, and I know I did it before, but I don't think I can do it again. Back then, I had a different idea of what the mask was, and I was just thinking about the Lucha Libre legacy and everything. I'm not saying that I don't respect the Lucha Libre legacy anymore. I do. I love Lucha Libre. I love pro wrestling, but this is a different thing. I remember at the beginning of this, Tito said, oh, Alberto, this is not the WWE. Come on, Tito, seriously. I was like, seriously, man, everybody knows this is not the WWE, and everybody knows the difference between one sport and the other, or one sports entertainment and the other. I will wear the mask on the way to the cage, but once I hear that ring bell, I won't be wearing it. I'll be just throwing punches and kicks to Tito's face.
I love it. Okay. By the way, speaking of the mask, can I just get your opinion on Cain Velasquez? What do you think of the transition that he's made from MMA to pro wrestling? And am I right in thinking that WWE is misusing him? Like, he did such a great thing with AAA with the mask flying around, and then he comes to WWE, they take the mask off him, and they make him into this, like, slow MMA fighter. It feels like they didn't see the magic of those two matches, and it just kind of turned him into everyone else. Am I wrong?
No, you're completely right. I think Cain Velasquez is doing the right thing. He accomplished everything in the MMA world, in the UFC, and it was time for him to try something different. And why not? If you can continue making good money going to an organization like WWE, why not, right? But I agree with you. I don't understand why they decided to do that to Cain Velasquez, but, you know, I was there for quite some time, and I know sometimes they do things with no sense. And that's yes. The reason I ended up not being there in the first place. So I hope they do the right thing with Cain Velasquez, because the Latino community, they love him. He's an amazing athlete, and I know if he's going to be just fine if he continue doing what he's been doing since day number one.
Okay, one last thing before I let you go, and it's almost like a favor to ask. And maybe I need to educate myself as well. What is up with Campbell McLaren? I mean, is this an act that this guy does? Every time he does an interview, he talks about me, how I'm against Combate Americas. Meanwhile, I have Tito on, I have you on, I talk about it every time, Juliana Pena and stuff. But he seems to have this idea in his mind that I'm anti-Combate Americas, that I don't want you to succeed. Can you tell the guy to chill out? I don't know if it's all like kayfabe and it's all a thing, but if you see him, can you tell him to just take it down a notch, and that I have never said any of the things that he's actually saying? Like, if I wanted to engage with him and actually feed the troll that he has become, I would, but I don't want to give him that satisfaction. Can you just send him the message from me to him that I'm not wishing you guys to fail? I'm hoping you succeed. I'm having you on to talk about the show beforehand. Can we just cool it with this talk? I'm sure you've heard him say some of this stuff in the past. It's getting a little tiresome, if I'm being honest.
Yeah, I have not heard anything from Campbell, but the stuff we do on TV and stuff, yes, to promote the show. But I will tell him, I will pass him your message.
Please.
And he will thank you for having me in your show. And thank you for having that perro Tito Ortiz in your show, and thank you for helping us promote this amazing event, which is going to help us to continue growing and doing what we've been doing since day number one with Combat Americas, which is promoting Latinos, promoting the sports of MMA. Thank you. Thank you.
Prediction? You want to give us a prediction?
Me winning. I don't know in which round, but winning. I will win this in day number one. When I said, Campbell, I want to fight, and I want to fight Tito. Me winning.
Okay. I wish you the best, my friends. Gracias. Thank you very much, and looking forward to it on Saturday. Good luck to you.
Thank you, amigo. Thank you. See you later, amigo.
There he is. Alberto El Patron. Alberto Rodriguez. Alberto Del Rio. Dos Caras Jr. I need to work on my R's. Drr, drr. But yes, the Camel McLaren. I mean, really, this guy, every chance he gets, he has. One day, many moons ago, on the old show with New York Rick, M.A.R., he was on, had him on multiple times, and I asked him, okay, so clearly the focus of the promotion is to target the Latin American audience. Why? I was curious. We've never seen this before in MMA. What's the thinking behind this? I mean, it's kind of like a softball question, if you will. And he has turned this question into me saying that it was a mistake to do this, into me rooting against the company, all this nonsense. And he tries to like go after me on Twitter. I'm like, gosh, you're like 50 something years old, 60. Like, what are you worried about? Some stupid question that I asked maybe 7 years ago. That's not even the question that you have turned it into in your mind. It's crazy. Ben Folks reached out to me last week because he did a feature on him for The Athletic. He's like, oh, he said all this stuff about you. I didn't say any of that stuff. None of it. I didn't say a single one of it. And I know he kind of plays like the drunk uncle on TV, but like, gosh, relax, buddy. I didn't say any of this stuff. Take it down a notch. Chill out. Relax. Okay. I just had to get that out of my... I've been holding on to that for a long time. Anyway, Matter Moments. We're going to have Matzabon with Israel Adesanya. Stay tuned for that. Let your friends know. It's great for a day like today, by the way. Very cold outside here in the Northeast, snowing. Who wouldn't want some matzo ball soup? Anyway, for now, though, let me tell you about my good friends over at Whoop. This is the first time that I think that Whoop is featured on the program. Oh, we're bringing back one of the classics. You know, I must say, TST on the podcast, which I know you don't listen to, Corporate Jake, because you're kind of like New York Rick in this regard.
You only sort of
focus on the stuff that you are directly tied to. Never any support for any of the other stuff that I do, the multitude of things.
That's right.
But anyway, TST has done a great job of introducing new songs each and every week to the pod. So
okay, I'll write that down.
Last week, by the way, we had a show called The Business of MMA. It was great. This week, we're going to have Rich Eisen on. Anyway, as you take a look at the Combate America's card this Saturday on pay-per-view. Busy Saturday in the world of combat sports. Let me tell you about my good friends over at Whoop, okay? Anyway, we're all looking for ways to improve our health, whether it's being smarter about how we train, making a better effort to get more sleep, or simply thinking about our body's overall wellness. Personally, I don't sleep enough. I'm way too stressed. I feel like I'm, you know, about to collapse at any moment, and I could use something like Whoop to keep me on the straight and narrow. Anyway, today's sponsor, Whoop, is a fitness tracker that goes beyond counting steps and provides 24/7 fitness, sleep, and recovery insights personalized to you. There's nothing else like it on the market. Our lives cause different levels of stress on our body, from training to work and our lives at home. Whoop understands that and qualifies it for you into actionable metrics. Take a listen to this. With Whoop, you'll get a daily recovery score that looks at biometrics like heart rate variability, resting heart rate, and your sleep performance to let you know how ready your body is to perform. You're given insight into the intensity of your training, can track how strenuous your day is, and get next level sleep insight with suggested sleep times based on how strenuous your day is. You can track your sleep stages and cycles and see how much sleep you get compared to how much you actually needed. The Whoop Strap 3.0 has a 5-day battery life. Could you imagine 5 days? On-the-go charging, so you never need to take it off, is waterproof, has Bluetooth low energy. It can connect to other Bluetooth low energy devices, so you can sync your heart rate to compatible treadmills, bikes, and rowers. Thank you very much to, I believe, Isabel for replaying the song. Right shout out there? All right. Appreciate it. Metzger, my guy. Anyway, whether you're looking to be smarter about your fitness, better about your sleep, or be more mindful of your body's recovery. Whoop has you covered. Don't wait for New Year's resolutions to start being more in tune with your body. If you're looking to be smart about how you train, sleep, or recover, Whoop is offering my audience, the greatest audience on the planet, 15% off with my code Ariel. That's it. Go to whoop.com. That's Whoop, W-H-O-O-P.com, and use the code Ariel at checkout and optimize your performance with Whoop. W-H-O-O-P. Use the code Ariel. Support them because they support us. Now, a few weeks ago in studio, we had the reigning defending UFC middleweight champion Israel Adesanya join us. The Last Stylebender. Of course, everyone wondering, who's next for him? Is it going to be Yoel Romero? Is it going to be Jared Cannonier? Is it going to be Johnny Bones Jones? Is it going to be Paulo Costa? Well, we don't answer any of those questions in this particular segment, but I'll tell you more about it on the back end of the segment about where they're trending. For now, though, after the show, we went to the cafeteria and we did the second installment of our Matzo Ballin series. We first did it with Action Bronson, critically acclaimed. I believe we're up for an Emmy. Now we're doing one with Israel Adesanya. And let me tell you something. He gave us his own little spin on this. No one's ever eaten a matzo ball soup quite like this. Sit back, relax, enjoy. Me, Izzy, matzo balls. What a life. Here it is. Hey everyone, it's Ariel Helwani, and that's Israel Adesanya. The reigning defending UFC middleweight champion, the undisputed king, if you will. And Israel, we are here in exotic Bristol, Connecticut.
Exotic, very, very.
Have you ever been here before?
Nope, not yet.
This couldn't be further away from Auckland, right?
Yeah. I don't know how far, but probably like 18 hours. Yeah, a long way from
home. And this is ESPN HQ.
I'm out here, man.
The campus that everyone talks about. It's a big
deal. The worldwide leader in sports. Like, that's all I've heard throughout all my life. So to be here, this is cool. This is a little moment for me.
It's sort of a rite of passage, so I want to take you around.
Okay.
And then I actually have a big surprise for you as we get to the cafeteria right over here.
All right, all right.
There's a lot of important people walking by, as you can see. You can walk by, no problem.
Yeah,
absolutely.
Well, man,
Dapper up. Hey,
so Jam,
what's
up?
Good to meet you, man.
Hey, this is one of our, thanks so much,
our great NFL analysts.
Oh, for real?
Yes, that's football.
Brother, I know football.
Not the fake Aussie stuff.
Touchdown.
The real American stuff.
Yeah, we don't really do it like that.
That's right,
that's the Heisman. That's the Heisman.
But your winning dances, though, are definitely dances we see in the end zone.
Hey, they ain't competing on my level, though.
How about that? So you see a lot of famous people in here.
Yeah, okay.
This is the campus. ESPN celebrating its
40th
year.
Beautiful, even at night. Oh, yeah. Wow. I see that.
And, college football is a very big thing here. So these are all
the big teams. Where's Deontay Wilder from again?
Deontay Wilder is from Alabama.
Alabama. So they're like one of the top teams,
they're
right?
One of the top teams, yes. The University of Alabama. One of the fun things that you can actually do here is you can pick your alma mater. So do you know what alma mater means? And they'll play the song.
What's the alma mater mean again?
Alma mater means where you went to school.
Oh, really?
So okay. I went to one of these schools. I went to Syracuse, right over
Syracuse,
there.
Eight.
So they play the fight song. Every school has like a fight
sure,
song.
Like a band theme
yes.
music. Okay.
Pretty cool, right?
It sounds like Tom and Jerry.
A little bit.
Yeah.
It's good. I've rocked out to this song before.
Straight up. My man.
Okay, so this is my favorite part of ESPN. This is the cafeteria where they serve food.
The hub, the heart of the place.
Yes. And one of my favorite foods is something called matzo ball soup.
Matzo ball soup.
Yes, well, sort of. That's more Italian.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. It's Jewish.
Yes, it's Jewish. Okay. Have you ever had it?
Nope.
So I've been doing this thing where I've been trying to introduce people to matzo ball soup because for me, it's like people say chicken soup for the soul.
Yeah.
Our mutual friend Action Bronson called it Jewish ayahuasca.
For real?
He says it opens your mind. He calls it a PED. He actually was in a street fight back in the day and said he had muscle soup beforehand and he felt like then he can actually go to battle.
Damn.
So this might change everything for you. So I want to introduce you to it if you don't mind. So we have to grab our trays right
our
over here because that's cafeteria etiquette.
It feels
right?
like we're in like a movie.
That's right. Oh, thank you. Thank you, sir. Okay, so this is the cafeteria.
Where's the cool kids table?
Cool kids table's in the back.
Oh,
we're about to go there.
In the back of the bus.
So they make
This is Bristol, Connecticut matzo ball soup. Only the finest.
Only the finest.
Here we go.
Right there. Yeah. Okay, we'll have the sandwich as well.
Yeah, we got the sandwich too. It's very, it's a very Jewish delicacy.
Yes.
Thank you very much.
What kind, is that pastrami?
It's a Reuben. Have you ever heard of a Reuben before?
I feel like I have.
This is incredible, right here. What we have here.
Okay, it looks good.
They're
stepping it up.
Yeah,
is it for me?
Chant.
Oh, thanks, you guys.
And you.
Appreciate that, man. Thank you very much.
This is a great honor. I once went to Katz's Deli with Rampage Jackson.
Katz's.
That's a legendary New York deli.
Okay.
And I introduced him to matzo ball soup, and truth be told, he didn't love it.
He didn't love it.
He said he didn't like the texture.
So I'm hoping that your palate... He didn't like the texture. He didn't talk about taste. He talked about texture.
Texture.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
I'm hoping your palate is a little more...
refined. Yeah.
We're all the way in the corner here.
In the corner. See, cool kids.
The corner. This is so exciting. Wow. I can't believe I'm having matzo ball soup with the reigning, defending UFC middleweight champion.
You say this is a nerd's table.
No. Cool kids.
Oh, the nerds.
Oh, yeah. I blew it.
See what I did there?
So exciting. First off, can you just tell me what you think of how it looks?
I feel like you're ready to go in. Yeah.
You're excited.
I'm salivating already.
Yeah. You like the present? Is it a little funky? Like that's a big ball in the middle there.
I like the smell. It's like brothy.
Yeah, chicken soup.
Salivating. This ball, it feels like... I've had it before, like a doughy. I've seen it before.
Kind of like a dumpling.
Dumpling,
but
yeah.
There's nothing actually in it. It's not hollow, but there's no secret surprise in it.
I've had this before without the broth.
Really?
So I've had something the same texture as well.
Okay.
Yeah. I'm just going to use my hands.
Well, you're going straight with the hands? I've never done it this way.
I'm not
going
to eat it. Maybe I am, and I just broke off a piece.
Okay, you're going straight like that. Wow.
Oh, this is dope.
Yeah, you like
it? I've had this before.
You have?
Not matzo ball soup, but I've had that texture before.
Certainly not in Nigeria.
No. Where did I have it? In America. It was like a dumpling. Oh, it'll come back to me.
Let's see. Here we go. Here's the first official.
This is good.
You like it?
On a cold night, Christmas, by the fireplace, this would be dope.
Sure.
Yeah.
So what do you think of the texture?
If you leave this out for Santa Claus, he'll love it.
Yeah, it's kind of... interesting that you say that. Since
it's a Christmas.
Not, yeah, but no, because Jewish people don't celebrate
Christmas.
But I appreciate that you did that. Yes.
Yeah.
Well, actually, it's Passover is the holiday.
That's the one. Is that the one with the blood on the wall?
Wow.
Yeah.
Look at you.
So that way you don't get your firstborn killed.
How do you know that?
I grew up in Sunday school.
That's
right. You know, I know the stories.
Your name is Israel.
It is.
Were you named after the state?
No, not the state. No. The state over people. Yeah.
Really?
Israelites. Yeah. Because I mean. In my culture, when you have a baby, you wait 3 or 7 days to get to know the baby first. And then you have a naming ceremony. And then whatever the beliefs, if you're Muslim or Christian, the leader, the pastor will bestow a Christian name on the baby. So Israel is my Christian name. And then key members in your family, like your mom's parents, your dad's parents, you know, maybe your mom's favorite auntie or something, they'll give you a name. So I have Israel, Mobolaji, Timitayo, Oduanyo, Oluafemi, Olabi, Adesonya.
Wow.
That's all my names. And I mentioned it after the Brunson fight. No, after the Tavares fight when I was speaking in Yoruba.
Yeah.
Yeah, but no one really picked that up. But yeah, I just let them know.
In the cage, you did it.
Yeah, I did. I post mic with Homeboy on the mic. I can't remember now.
Jimmy Smith.
Jimmy, yeah. My man.
And how many names total is that?
Seven. Including my last name. This is dope.
You love it. Wow.
I feel like I want to dip that in this.
But the
I like
Reuben.
The fact, yeah. I like the fact this is kind of just marinating in it. Like it's soaking up all the flavor.
Yeah.
This is beautiful.
You love
Rampage,
it.
Rampage, what's your problem, man? I'll give it out of 10. If he gave it like a, I'll say he gave it like a 5. I'll give it an 8.
Really? Okay. Are you a harsh food critic? Or are you kind of easy
harsh.
To please?
No. Yeah, I'm relatively easy to please, but if something I don't like, I don't like. I'll tell you right out. But this is nice.
Do you think it's possible to get this in Nigeria?
Probably, yeah.
You think so?
Do we have anything similar? I like the presentation. It looks like something you could have in Nigeria, like eba or fufu or amala, and then you eat it with a stew. So sometimes you'd have, say, the stew here, and you have the swallow, they call it, the dough. So eba, you grab it with your hand, dip it in the, and then eat it. Yeah. So it kind of reminds me a little bit of that with the presentation. But I like the fact that the... dumpling just kind of soaks in there and marinates like a spa.
Yeah.
So it's filled with flavor.
If you were to invite me to like a traditional Nigerian meal, what are the must-haves?
Jollof rice for you, definitely. See, the problem is, We have our independence day on October 1st.
Oh.
And in New Zealand, we have celebrations. Or whenever we have, like, a Nigerian celebration, like someone's birthday or stuff like that, a lot of people get invited, you know, like they'll invite their work colleagues and stuff. And they f*** up sometimes by mixing the wrong things with the wrong things. So now, we've made that mistake before at an event. So now you have to have, like, sections and inform them, like, the jollof rice does not go with the amala, you know, because it doesn't really work together.
Okay.
You have, yeah, so you have to kind of understand the culture of the food. So now they... You have someone at the table to advise them on what to eat. Yeah.
And jollof rice?
It's called, so think of a jol of rice.
Oh.
Yeah. So a jol of rice, jollof rice.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Okay. And what is it?
It's like orange rice.
Okay.
It's like the famous, and a lot of, in West Africa, a lot of countries try and claim it, but we make the best.
Okay.
There's the Ghanaian, the Sudanese, and all those people. Yeah. It's like, no, they don't, we Nigerians started jollof rice.
Okay. Oh yeah, look at that. When you slurp, that means you like it.
Gotta let them know. I do this in restaurants. I'm that guy that licks the plate.
Really?
At the, and the people are like, the uncultured swine or whatever. But I eat with my hands as well, but you gotta have a relationship with your food, I feel. These kind of take it away.
Okay.
So I'd rather just...
You'd rather get rid of it? Please, I want you to do it the way you do
Thank
it.
So
wow,
much.
Look at this.
It's so much nicer.
Wow, look at that. That is amazing.
And you really... I mean, God gave us utensils. This kind of takes it away. It blocks it. And even like when we eat things like this in Nigeria, you have a water basin that you used to wash your hands first. I already did. I was talking about... what was I talking about beforehand?
When you return.
So I went back, right? I told my dad, I just want to, like, low-key go in the country, kick it, no beef, no, like, fanatics, all that kind of stuff. And he said, no, it won't be possible because they know you over there.
Mm.
And he was right. From the airport, people were recognizing me, some of the police officers. And I had my own security team outside, and some of the area boys, some of the gangsters, they already like, oh, my, this man, Israel. And then just show love, say what's up, take pictures. And, yeah, for me, it was just... like surprising, like I didn't think it'd be like that straight away. So if that's what it was like then, next time I go, I know it's going to be even like not worse, but it's going to even more prominent. Like my presence is going to be known places. I went back to my old school and I shut the whole place down. Now wherever I went, I was shutting places down sometimes. Wow. So next
this
time
this is post Gaslam, right?
Yeah, post Gaslam.
Yeah.
So and then Kamara takes care of Kobe, and then. I think I'll probably go after my next fight. I take care of whoever.
Mm.
And then, yeah, it's going to be, yeah, it's going to be crazy going back home.
Is there a chance it happens in 2020? UFC Africa? What do you think?
Possibly.
You think so?
Possibly.
Where would it be?
I'm thinking Morocco or somewhere in Nigeria or South Africa. It's possible.
Okay.
But it's just the
Why
logistics.
Morocco?
Morocco.
They have arenas there?
I'm sure they have venues. I'm sure they have venues. Kusman just went there, met the prince with, he was with, I think, Cejudo.
Yeah.
So he told me some things.
Okay, all right.
But yeah, he said it's a beautiful spot, beautiful place, yeah. Like, very beautiful. I haven't been, but I'd love to.
Mm. I'm getting such joy out of seeing you eat it.
It's beautiful,
like
man. I'm not, is it normal?
No, it's good. I mean, you're giving it your own little, like, I'm very like, oh, here's my spoon. Yeah. You're doing it. So this is called a Reuben. Have you ever had a Reuben before?
It feels like I have. It looks like I have. And I'm pretty sure I have, but it's something like
this right here.
It's like a deli meat.
Yeah.
It is, yeah.
But there's some, you know, there's dressing in there. There's some cheese.
I love the smell. It reminds me of something. The sauce reminds me of something. It's tingling my brain, my third eye right now.
See, when we ask you to come to Bristol, it's a little far away, but we'll treat you right.
Hey, you gotta look after me, man. I'm going back to light heavyweight.
Oh. I wonder if you'll be there.
Mmm.
What do you think? It's good? Feels good. Long day.
Mouthgasm.
Yeah, man.
Oh my God. I'm arriving. Oh. It just breaks off, like it separates it from itself. I like the kimchi or the, not kimchi, the lettuce.
Yeah.
I think it's
a little bit of sauerkraut.
Mmm, sauerkraut.
Yeah. Think you could get that in Nigeria or New Zealand?
Maybe not Nigeria, but New Zealand, the meat, yeah. And sauerkraut, I'm sure someone makes it, but it's not something that's part of the,
the food group over there. But this, yeah. Oh, it's beautiful.
Yeah, you're enjoying it? I'm going to have some too.
If I was in high school, and for lunch, this would be nice. I wish we had lunches like this, man, when I was in school.
Do I identify more with New Zealand at this, or is it both down the middle?
What do you mean?
Like,
depends anyway. Even people from Alaska, if they f*** with me heavy, I f*** with them back. Like, okay. I'm not a guy who's very patriotic, and I like, you see me, I don't walk out with a flag.
Right.
Or anything like that. I don't like to, what's the word? I don't like to do that. Cause, you know, look at me, I'm black. People know I'm definitely not born in New Zealand. And my bloodline, my ancestors from Nigeria. But New Zealand, there was a point when I was driving from Auckland to Wanganui in 2011, going into 2011, I was driving back to my parents' house. I was riding in my, not McLaren, old beat up car called Chewy. And I was going down the country roads, the parapowers, excuse me, woo. And there was a moment that day I realized this is where I'm going to stay. This is where I'm going to be for the rest of my life. Because I always thought I was going to end up in the States, or I was going to end up in Canada or somewhere like that. But then that trip just made me realize how beautiful the country was. And I decided, like, wow, this is where I'm going to stay forever. Yeah.
What about when you were in China?
China. That's more of like this is the best analogy I used. When LeBron was playing for the Heat, right?
Mm-hmm.
Then he went back to Cleveland.
Mm-hmm.
And now he's with the Lakers. So coming up, and they know this, a lot of the Kiwi promoters, they wouldn't give me that shine. They were giving it to, like, Joseph Parker and, you know, rugby guys trying to make it into boxing, you know, that kind of stuff. And I'm like, do you guys see what I'm doing? I'm people up, you know? I'm doing it in style, and no one's backing me. And there was even one press conference, I remember, I fought as a co-main event for one of Joseph Parker's fights. And there was a press conference, and everyone sat there. I don't even know why we were there. And I remember this, because it was the Liga 40th anniversary fight night, I think. And yeah, Joseph was the headline. I was the co-main event. And there was a press conference, and literally every question was directed at Joseph.
Wow.
And I was just sitting there. Nothing against him. Don't get me wrong. This is just the press I'm talking about. Every question was directed against at the main event. And then Lola was trying to tell people, like, you know, this guy, Israel, you know, he's the next one after Ray Sefo. Hold up 2 seconds. I'll take this down. Wow. This is on for evening training, I'm pretty sure. Yep.
What do you mean?
Normally when I'm in New Zealand, this is when I...
Oh, all right, really?
Cool, let's go to the gym.
Wow.
Yeah. Excuse me. So all the questions were directed at him. And I was sitting there just like, not stewing, but I was just like, what are we even doing here? I could have been... Because then I had to go back home and I was going to be in traffic. Excuse me. Got to wash it down.
Yeah, I feel you.
And then, in that moment, I decided, like, one day, they'll know. They'll know. I remember that moment, and I did well in the fight. I f***ed the dude up, and Joseph also knocked this guy out in the first round. Oh, there was a pullout, that's right, I remember. And Terry took the fight, but still knocked him out in the first round, did well, but I felt like I stole the show. And, yeah, they didn't back me the way they should have. So what do? I go where the money is. And the Chinese brought me over as a journeyman. For their guys to beat up on, because obviously they want to promote their guys, but then that didn't work too well for them, because I know. And I beat up all their guys and decided, all right, I spoke the language a little bit. I was immersed in the culture. The people loved me over there, so they were like, you know what, let's bring this guy on our team. Because whenever they had a show, it was Team China versus everybody else. So they gave me a name, you know, Hei Long. That means the Black Dragon.
Wow.
And they kind of just like put this narrative behind me for the Chinese people to back me up. I still have a lot of Chinese fans, trust me. Hey, wa ai zhongguo. And
what does that mean?
I love China.
Okay.
Yeah, or wa ai ni. I love you guys. But yeah, so it was just me pretty much going to the Lakers. That's how I see it, because they will pay me and they will give me attention. And then after I jumped to the UFC, a lot of the same promoters from New Zealand, they started trying to get close and associate and talk to Mike Ango about, oh, we would like to, you know, we can give Israel, you know, 50,000 to... da, 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 for 6 months. And I was just like, huh? Like, nah. You snooze, you lose. You had your chance. But it was a good time there. I enjoyed my time in China. It was it's something you can't buy, experience. I said, I fought over 20 times in 1 year. And that's not a joke. And people think, oh, yeah, he was just fighting some bums. Like, no. I fought Philip Van Linden. I fought Simon Marcus. I fought, Guo Chang, one of the best fighters. I fought him. I was trying to get Fang Bian. He's one of the guys. That I called him out for years. He never wanted to fight me. So apparently he's retired now. He's going towards MMA.
But, why did you go towards MMA?
Because I want to be the best fighter in the world. All these people who are saying, let me have another bite.
Sure.
Let me try this real quick.
Oh, yeah, that's a good one.
I don't know if this is, maybe this is groundbreaking.
This is, I think, groundbreaking right here. No one has ever dipped a Reuben in matzo ball soup.
I'm doing that on all levels, man. It's all right, but I think they're better separate. Mm. For me, anyway. So, question again.
Eventually, why did you decide to go to MMA?
See Canelo's last fight?
Yes.
And after that, you know, he did something really amazing. Four-time world champion. Beautiful. People now, oh, bro, he's the best pound-for-pound fighter in the world. Best pound-for-pound fighter in the world. Fighter.
That bothers you?
Mayweather has been saying it for years. Everyone's been saying it for years. Even, like, the jiu-jitsu guys, like, best pound-for-pound boxer. If you want to fight, I could have done the same thing. I could have done boxing and do the blueprint. You know, fight some journeymen, some bums. Fight like a local champion, climb the ranks. Fight like, you know, Australasian or Oceania champion, climb the ranks, you know. The blueprint, build your record up. Fight some world champion, get a belt. Or do it in kickboxing. I could have done that, but I know in my heart, you know, I know in my soul that if I faced up against a guy on a different style, judo guy, or jiu-jitsu guys in the streets, you know, who's going to break it up when we're in a clinch? Who's going to go, not break. Step back. If someone leg kicks me and I don't know how to check a leg kick, what's going to happen? So I just, for me, I never want to feel vulnerable in any situation. I never want to feel like any man can checkmate me in any position. So I had to humble myself and go back to the drawing board and learn and really study and hone the craft of fighting in all aspects. Like, people haven't even seen my ground game yet. Like, hints and bits and pieces of it, but you haven't even seen my top game. Khabib ain't the only one who can maul people. I'm telling you, man.
Do you feel like now, finally, like, I know one of the big things was people didn't respect you. Wait till he fights this guy.
I'm still all hype, bro. I'm still all hype.
Has that quieted down, though, or do you still get it? You still get it?
I don't know if I still get it, but I still think
You have to tell yourself that?
I don't know if I have to tell myself that, but I still think they think I'm all hype. And I'm okay with that. I like hype. That's why my merch on Engage for this fight was just a big me and my stance and hype. That's why the track I came to was called Hype to Hype. I've been about hype. Hype has been a part of my journey, like, not just through dancing or fighting, just through life. And yeah, I enjoy it. So they can still think I'm hype, and they can still think I'm, you know, oh, this is the next guy, because they've been saying that since the Brad Tavares fight. Really, they've been, oh, okay, nah, he can't take Brad. Schooled him for 5 rounds. 5-0. Shut out. Oh, Brunson, not. He's going to take him down, f*** him up, submit him. First round knockout. Cool. Silva, nah, he's too crafty for him. Well, maybe that one was, oh, nah, Silva's old. But we did what we did. It was a movie. It was beautiful. It was the passing of the torch. And he survived that fight. Kelvin was supposed to knock me out, was supposed to finish me. He hits hard. How's he going to knock him out? How am I going to, you know, get him? I did what I did. I f***ed him up. Even the fifth round, I almost buried him. Robert, he went, do you know he went 10 rounds with Romero? You know that?
Yeah.
10 rounds with Romero. Oh, my God. I said that at the press conference. You don't need 10. You need 5, 4, 3, 2. I did it in 2. So now that's everyone's, oh, no, Paulo is too, he's too muscly. I don't know what they're saying now. He's too, they're just waiting for me to lose, but pick a number, wait in line. Going to be waiting a long time.
It's a bummer that the Costa fight, just the dynamic between you two was just so,
you know,
great.
One thing that fight reminded me of, McGregor Aldo.
You know, there's only been one time other than that in UFC history
where two undefeated,
yeah, males.
Yeah.
Why did it remind you of Aldo McGregor?
I'll say it after the fight.
What?
I know. I like
Which
to tease
fight?
You. When I fight him.
That may never happen.
Okay, you know
happen.
What? Today? Yeah. Today? Nah, it will happen. I think it will happen.
Okay.
But
today?
I know how to push his buttons. He's such a meathead. I can push his buttons and make him do what I want him to do.
Okay.
And then I'll counter him. Like, people they were always used to my linear attacks. They didn't know about my lateral attacks, my hooks. And they thought, when I started countering Rob, they forget. That's what I started doing when I first started kickboxing. I was a counter striker. So I went back to my roots, and I was just hitting him from all angles. Like, literally hitting him from all angles. Even when I was in the Matrix, caught him with an uppercut, you know? Yeah, so Paula is a, he's a guy that's a, he's a really aggressive bull, but I can be a matador. Hola.
Is there a part of you that's bummed it's not happening because you enjoyed the challenge of messing with him and getting under his skin and all that?
I would have done that in the mic and on the night.
Yeah.
So I'm all
the dynamic
out.
Between you two was so great.
Perfect. It was a movie.
It was perfect.
You know, the big Ivan Drago and this nerd, you know? It would have been perfect, man, but hey, it can still happen. Romero can still catch these hands.
We also have dessert for you, by the way.
Huh?
We have dessert as well. Dessert?
Let's go.
Look at this. Wow.
Do you have any milk?
I can get you some milk.
Please, thank you, ma'am.
This is very traditional.
Thank you, Red.
Now, the introduction of milk into the meal is not traditional, but you're doing this your own, you know, your
freestyle.
Own.
Freestyle bender.
Do you know what rugelach is?
Say it again?
Rugelach.
Rugelach.
This is rugelach.
What's this one?
This is kind of like a chocolate bread, if you will.
Rugelach. This reminds me of like a Kurdish.
We might as well be having Sabbath dinner here.
Hey.
This is like as traditional as it gets.
L'chaim.
Yes. What do you say back to L'chaim?
Mm-hmm.
Just L'chaim.
L'chaim.
Yes. Double Action time. And I were talking about that. Mm. Isn't this amazing? Wow.
Amazing, man.
This is the best treatment I've gotten at ESPN since I came here.
Thank you so much, man. Thank you for having me.
Oh.
Thank you for this. This is beautiful.
It is a
this
pleasure.
Is beautiful. I used to watch this. I still do watch this. I keep saying this. I'm just a fan. Like, people forget. And I, even like me being here this weekend watching the fights on New York, I'm like, man, this is cool. Like, I woke up, I watched the weigh-in video on fight day, and I just got hyped. And I was like, just grateful. Like, gratitude. Like, just being here in the position I'm in. And then I'm like right there in the front row, you know, met The Rock.
Oh.
You know?
What was that like?
It was cool. It was
first
real quick.
Time?
Yeah, first time, yeah.
Okay.
Because you already hit me up after my last fight.
Yeah.
Excuse me. But just, yeah, like a guy like that, Attitude Era, man. He used to crack me up on the mic, you know.
What do you
talking
say
about
to
you? Them candy asses. He's a big fan. He loves what I'm doing. And I said the same thing back. I didn't really get, I wanted, another time, you know, we'll talk to him another time. I'm sure we'll link up on something in the future. But
right.
It was just, he's a big man. He's a very big energy.
Right.
Yeah. Like, cool. Like, just very nice. Yeah. It was just, like, those are the guys I used to watch growing up. They were the guys like my heroes. Him, Stone Cold, John Cena. Those kind of guys when I was really, when I thought wrestling was real.
Oh, really?
Even it's still real to me, damn it.
Everything. It's amazing to me that everything you say is like a meme.
I know, right?
How are you like that? How are you so in tune with everything?
As I'm with the culture.
You
I'm
are?
With the culture, yeah.
Cheers.
L'chaim.
L'chaim, yes. This is incredible.
Mm.
It's one of the great nights of my life right here.
Mm.
Having this with...
Yeah, you're the man, man. You're the man.
Having this with you is
never
amazing.
Change, Ariel.
Thank you.
I don't care what they say about you.
Who says what?
People. Nah. What you mean?
The haters. Well, all hype.
Mm, all hype, baby.
Mm. Greatest byproduct of your success or the
options.
Inspiration, but just options.
Mm.
That's it.
Options. Yeah, even like stuff like that, that covers a lot of bases because the option,
sure.
Like, before 2-3-4, I remember my brother, because he lives with me, he's one of my flatmates, he was he was working like ridiculous hours, like 42, 50 hour a week sometimes as a security guard. And I was seeing the work I was putting in just to like make sure he comes to fight, we can have a good time, pay for flights. So now I just pay for all my family's flights, like all of them.
Wow.
Yeah, just, and even this fight I paid for extras, like about 8 extra people who, but just, I do it because I don't do it for the love or the likes, I do it for the love. I just do it because I want people who are really important to me to be there. And yeah, so just the option to do that, to be able to do that, is just a blessing. So I have to sit down and just pinch myself sometimes because I forget. Because it's all regular to me now, but I have to be grateful. So I practice gratitude, and something you have to practice. I learned that recently, so I have to really practice that sometimes. I'm grateful for the position I'm in because a lot of people, yeah, they wouldn't be in this position. And I remember even my last job. I remember the day I quit. I remember the feeling. That was September 3rd, 2014. I never looked back.
That was your last job?
My last job, the day I quit.
And what was it again?
I was just number crunching, like metering, billing type. It was dead entry. It was, some things aren't for me. Like, even some people, when I was in China, I met some couple of guys who literally just fought because it paid, and they were good at it. And it paid the bills. They got good money for it, but some of them would have rather been musicians and other things, but they just fought because, you know, good money for them anyway to live off and live in Thailand and just live like a king, you know. But they would rather be doing something else. And I feel like, well, that's sad because then you're not really setting your soul on fire, you know. You wake up and, oh, I got to go train, you know. Yeah, you got to really enjoy what you do, man.
So September 3rd of 2014 was the last time you ever had to report to a job.
Mm-hmm.
And now look at you.
Mm-hmm.
Almost exactly 5 years ago.
Yeah, actually, I always remember the anniversary. Every single, and I always make a post or a repost or something like that. Cause
what led you to quit?
I tried 3 times beforehand. I'll have a little sip first.
Okay.
It's beautiful, man. I'll wipe my hands. I tried 3 times beforehand, and I failed. And most people would have, like, quit after that. Like, oh, I tried to quit this job, and I never really got anywhere. But then eventually, one time I was talking again at the desk about how I'm going to leave one day, and I heard this guy behind me, who was he's a very reserved person. He kind of sniggered, and I was like, what are you laughing at? He goes, well, Israel, you've said that about a year ago. You said that multiple times. And for me, I was like, so does that mean I'm going to just stop trying to escape this f***ing rat race? Oh, no, I failed. You better just stop. I'm going to be locked up here forever. Handcuffs, I'm going to do something with it. But yeah, that kind of chip in my shoulder. Shit like that I remember because I'm like, I remember a lot of things like that because I'm like, who the f*** are you to tell me or assume how I should think about myself? I just knew this wasn't for me. If it was something that I enjoy doing, something I love, that I have passion for, I'd do it with all my heart, like I do with fighting. But this is what I wanted to do. I knew this is something I could be great at from fight number 4. So I just knew, yeah, just keep going. No stopping me. Just passion and the work. I put the work in. And even like, I didn't feel like I deserve a lot of things I have right now, to be honest.
Why not?
I don't know. Like you just said, a lot of people, much more deserving people at the gym. Much more deserving people at the gym. Because they put the work in as well. But the thing is, like, I may not deserve it, but I f***ing earned it. Everything I have right now, I earned it. And no one can ever take that away from me. Deserve is a little bit subjective, but earned, I earned this shit. Earned this life. L'chaim.
L'chaim.
Cheers,
on
brother.
That note, you had this meal as well, my friend. You're an inspiration. Oh, you really are.
Don't make me cry. Takeaway, please.
And we are lucky to have you in this sport. We're happy that you you made the transition. Honestly, as someone who covers the sport, it's been so much fun just in the last year and a half watching you in the UFC and seeing what you're doing and also manifesting everything, saying that you're going to do it and then doing it it with style and just like disrupting, you know, the norm. It's a beautiful thing from the walkouts to the
knockouts.
Yes, to urinating in the cage, just telling everyone. Yeah. It's just a beautiful thing. So
nosebleeds and nosebleeds, my man.
Well done. Thank you
so
much.
It's been a pleasure, brother.
Israel Adesanya. Get it right. Stop
Israel,
saying it.
Israel Mobolaji Temitayo Oduanyo Oluwafemi Adesanya, the last stylebender. Remember the name. And L'chaim.
And L'chaim.
We out here. We out here.
We'll always remember our first matzo ball soup.
Oh, Mara, this is history.
This is history.
This is like... things like that, that's iconic. This right here, this is iconic.
Oh, wow. Okay. Who would have thought? Thank you, Israel. I appreciate it.
My man. Cut. And scene.
Iconic. Wow, what a word. And I want to thank the team here at ESPN, Alex, Kelsey, everyone that worked on putting that together, Corporate Jake, the whole team. Jordan, does Jordan get a shout out? I'm not even sure. Does he even get one? Sure, why not? The whole team back there for putting that together. That was a lot of fun. I enjoyed doing that. And I want to thank, of course, Izzy's team for bringing him here to Bristol, because that's no small task. I mean, you got to do the whole schlep 2 hours from New York City. So I hope you all enjoyed it. And I know a lot of you are wondering, what is Israel Adesanya going to do next? Who is he going to fight in his first official title defense? Although I know he calls it, you know, the two interim titles And he says that he already defended the interim title once. Well, we know about January 18th. That's Conor McGregor versus Donald Cerrone. And by the way, why do they call it McGregor Cowboy? Can we not just use their real names, McGregor Cerrone? And then we know about February 8th in Houston, John Jones against Dominic Reyes and Valentina Shevchenko against Caitlin Chookagian. By the way, I think they're doing one of those big press conferences before 2:45. So another reason to come to Las Vegas, mainly for our roadshow, but for the other stuff as well. And then we know about April 18th, Khabib Nurmagomedov versus Tony Ferguson in Brooklyn, which is great. What about that March 7th pay-per-view that's in Las Vegas? Right now I'm hearing that the talks are centered around Zhang Weili versus Joanna Jędrzejczyk, strawweight title. That's the fight that I think everyone wants to see. And perhaps Israel Adesanya against Yoel Romero. That's been discussed as well, but those two fights are not done. That would be quite the first quarter for the UFC, right? Conor, Jones, Israel, Khabib, Tony. I mean, that's a pretty darn good four-month stretch right there. So hopefully it all comes to fruition. We get those fights, and we could all be very excited about that. One quick thing before I let you go. I want to give a shout-out to my friends over at the Professional Fighters League. Before we get to all those big fights in 2020, they're the last event of the year. The 2019 Professional Fighters League season concludes with six world title fights at the biggest event of the year. The PFL Championship, New Year's Eve, New York City, Madison Square Garden, the Hulu Theater, six $1 million belts on the line. Who will be the six PFL champions crown? And the Women's Lightweight Championship, as you know, will be a rematch between Kayla Harrison and Larissa Pacheco. Kayla Harrison is undefeated and looking to add a mixed martial arts world title belt to go with her two Olympic gold medals. On New Year's Eve, PFL fighters are looking to build legacies and million-dollar knockouts. They're looking to add those to their resume. The ball doesn't drop until the PFL belts are raised. Don't miss the biggest night in MMA. The action starts at 7 p.m. Eastern. Watch it only on ESPN2, and that is the lineup right over there. Some familiar names. It's been a solid season for PFL, and last year was a lot of fun. Last year, we actually went head-to-head with our friends at PFL as they were doing the year-end show, the million-dollar event, if you will, at the theater. We were doing our award show this year. That is not happening because I wanted to wait until the year was officially over to do our awards. So our awards will be on January 6th, the first Monday post all that stuff, because I think December 31st, wait, did I get that right? Yes, I think I did get that right. Yeah, January 4th, January 11th. So the first, I don't like, a big pet peeve of mine is when you do awards before the year's up. And I know it gets a little quiet towards the end of the year, but there's still events. There's two Bellator events happening. There's a Bellator event and the Bellator / Ryzen event in Japan. There's PFL December 31st. And there's just a bunch of other things. Like, if we're actually going to do year-end awards, then let's do proper year-end awards. So the first Monday post those events at the end of the year will be January 6th. So that is when I will be giving out my awards, the Helwani Knows 2019 edition. And we've got some new categories, by the way. So please circle that on your calendar. Later on in the program, we're going to talk to Robert Whiteford, the Flying Judoka. It's been a while since I had him on the show. I'm looking forward to that. And then we're also going to talk to Alistair Overeem, who will be headlining the Saturday card in D.C., the Fight Like Hell event that we're dubbing in honor of the great Stuart Scott against Jairzinho Rozenstruik. And in a matter of seconds, I think we're going to be joined by, or 2 minutes, as I'm being told right over here, we're going to be joined by Tony Ferguson, who, as you may have heard, last week officially signed to fight Khabib Nurmagomedov on April 18th. This is the fifth time that they have tried to put this fight together, five times. And a litany of weird things have happened prior to each and every one of those fights. None more heartbreaking, none weirder than days away from the last time they were scheduled to fight each other in Brooklyn, New York, 2 years ago. Tony Ferguson at Fox doing some interviews, doing some PR, trips over one of the cords in the studio and blows out his knee. Just absolutely heartbreaking, you'll recall. They then called upon Max Holloway to step in on short notice. This is the history here. December of 2015, Khabib suffers a rib injury. April of 2016, Ferguson suffers a lung injury. March of 2017, Khabib, of course, fails to show up to the weigh-ins. That was UFC 209 and has to pull out of the fight literally hours before the fight. Like, we went through the whole song and dance. We went through the whole media week, the whole thing. They were there. They did the face-offs. They've done, by now they've done like 10 face-offs without fighting once. And then, of course, April of 2018, the injury. And that was the weirdest fight week of them all. It started on April 1st. We get the news about Ferguson pulling out. And then we get the news that Max Holloway, the 145-pound champion, is moving up to 155 to take this fight on 6 days' notice. And he gets to Brooklyn, and he starts to cut the weight. And then we get to the weigh-ins. Actually, I mean, lest I forget, of course, the media day on the Thursday. That's the infamous Barclays Center, Conor Khabib incident with the bus, send me location, Michael Chiesa, Ray Borg, Rose Namajunas, Karolina Kovalevich. I mean, just the craziest fight week in the history of fight weeks. Then we get to the actual weigh-ins, and while the weigh-ins are going on, the Conor court hearing is underway. He ends up showing up way after, but Holloway doesn't show up to the weigh-ins. Commission says no go, no good. And then after that, we go with Felder, and then we go with Iaquinta, and it was just a whole crazy. It ends up being Iaquinta, and as you know, Khabib wins that fight, and the rest, as they say, is history. But April 18th, we are going to do it. It's going to happen. Brooklyn, it has to happen. Fifth time's a charm. Khabib, Tony. And in his first interview since signing that bout agreement, it is an honor to say hello once again to the man they call El Kikui, Tony Ferguson, who's kind enough to join us on the phone. Tony, how are you?
What up? Hey, what's going on, man? We had a hell of a week last week, man, but we got through it.
Yes. Okay. Could you tell us how busy was that week? How crazy was that week? How stressful was that week? Because it seemed like it started last Monday when his team was putting out that they had signed a contract, but you hadn't signed a contract. What was the week like? Could you tell us?
It was cool, man. I mean, I was just coming off vacation, and I get a text from my agent. He's like, hey, they're going to send over a bout agreement out of nowhere, man. There was, like, no talks. I was like, all right, cool. You know what I mean? I'm like, all right, who are they offering? And obviously they said Khabib, and I was really excited. The manner that they did it, really, to me, wasn't the way I would have wanted it to go. So it made the week kind of unpleasant. I mean, but my fans are the freaking great. I mean, they didn't really know what was going on, but they kept it really lighthearted for me. My family's doing great, man, but it was about as smooth as a bumpy road. But, you know, we got to our destination, which is pretty cool.
So when you say they did it in a way that you didn't like, what do you mean by that?
I mean, the process wasn't the way I envisioned it going. I mean, that's why I wanted to sit down with the UFC. It's about time we actually started having conversations and me being a little bit more personable with the company. It went good, man. I can't say that it went bad. It just it took a little bit of time and a process, but I'm lucky I have my agents with me fighting for my back, so it's cool to have that.
Did you get any sense as to why they were so adamant to get this done now? The fight is still 4.5 months away, and they just announced a Conor fight that's a month and a half away. So, like, why did they need to have it done last week?
Hey, man, I kept poking the bear, and I don't know, Khabib and his manager or whoever they got over there handling this stuff, they got their hands full. They knew if this fight was going, they were going to try to avoid it as long as they could. Throw in GSP's name, Gaethje, Conor, you go for it, man. I'm the people's champ. He's going to get the people's elbow with the eyebrow.
Did you sincerely get the feeling that they were trying to find another opponent and not fight you?
No. This is chess, not checkers, baby. And like I said, man, I'm in this for a tournament. You have to beat everybody in order to be the champion. And I'm beating everybody. So it doesn't matter who they're going to put in front of me. It's a stepping game, man. And these guys are power stones.
Okay. And so late last week on Friday, you actually went to Las Vegas with your management balance sheet group, your representatives, your agents, and you sat down with UFC brass and you signed that contract. What was that meeting like for you?
Well, I mean, check it out. It all went pretty fast. I mean, like, look at after ESPN sent us the letter, and then Brett Okamoto went and said a bunch of stuff, you know, about the fight and then the hype that was going on. We requested a meeting, and it was important to me that we needed to make sure that we had this meeting and that we were both on the same page, not just somebody that's going to go in over here and make my countrymen do push-ups and make fun of them. You know, I use that hashtag. It's like, I got two of the chops with this dude, and he owes me 20 push-ups. That's the serious part. You know what I mean? I had to move, like, family stuff. You know, we were about to go get our Christmas tree and do some cool things like our tradition on a Friday. I had to move all that. I had to apologize to my kids because I made a promise, and I had to tell them we'll go on Saturday. Daddy has to go and handle business. You know, my management, hey, dude, they were in Mexico, man. They were fucking gone. And they ended up dishing out a day early to come and help me out just because the UFC wanted to get this thing done very fast, even though it's 4 months away. I understand, you know, the time and effort from Dana. I appreciate that, especially from Hunter. It was nice to sit there across the table and talk turkey. It was really cool, man, to be right there with the brass, especially with my agents. It's a big step up for me and my family and my company, especially my academy and the people that are going to be going there. That's for sure.
And so you're happy with where things ended up?
Oh, of course. I wouldn't say ended up. I'm happy the way things are going.
Okay.
You know what I mean? It's just the beginning of this whole new relationship. We had a decent year. I mean, I'm only fighting once a year, dude. I mean, you guys know me when I first started. I'm looking at my Ultimate Fighter trophy. I fought 6 times that year. And then the next part, I fought 3 and so on and so forth. So when the fans, the casuals, don't understand that when you beat everybody, it's kind of like fishing. When you have so many people fishing in the lake, man, you got, like, there's no more fish. Nobody's catching and releasing. Everybody's taking. So here I am, man, coming to claim what's mine.
I remember when I spoke to you after Khabib's win over Dustin Poirier in September, you said you were ready to fight December 14th. In the end, this fight is happening in April. Why? I mean, obviously, you know, it takes two to tango and he has to agree to that date as well. But why is it happening in April and not March or February?
I'm not sure. You have to ask the UFC on that. I mean, Khabib is still on his world tour. He's doing things, kissing babies and signing pictures and doing all that fun stuff. Who cares, man? You know I'm ready for February. I was ready to take another opponent if they were going to fucking do some crazy stuff. But everything worked out. So we got until April. We got plenty of time to train. We got plenty of time to not get hurt, to be very smart, to trust in our teams, and to give the fans exactly what they fucking want, man. This is their time's a charm. I hate to use my language like that, but you know I've slowed it down a lot.
I appreciate that. Because right this on. Fight is so big and because it's been talked about for so long, it's the fifth time they make it, how do you stop yourself, Tony, from not overexerting yourself, from not going too hard in training? Because you do have 4.5 months. You can't have a 4.5 month training camp. That would be too intense on your body. So how do you, you know, pace things so that you are peaking at the right time in April as opposed to March or February?
I don't change anything. I'm always peaking. I rest good, I rest hard, I party hard, and I play hard. It's exactly how I've been doing it for a very long time, and nothing's going to change. The only things I'm going to change are for me and for my team. Nobody else is going to know. I'm training 24/7. Last night I went for another bike ride. I forget how many miles. I put like probably like 6 to 8 miles in. I'm on a good one, man. Like, I'm always consistently training, and that motivation factor has been there. I just needed this knucklehead to sign on the dotted line so that my fans can get what they want. They can get their money's worth. So my fans that are like, oh, they got to make it to the date, fuck you. Pay me. Buy my pay-per-view early. Save that shit. Mark it down on your calendars. Write it down. Take a picture. I really don't give a crap what you guys do. But there's going to be fireworks April 18th. I'm going to make sure of it. So I'm going to give Khabib 2 to the chops, and he's going to give me 20 push-ups.
Are you the kind of guy that feel like, is there a part of you that feels like this fight is just cursed? It's not meant to be. It's not destined to happen.
No, you can stop. You can stop right there. I'm going to tell you right now.
Okay.
Don't even put those words out there.
All right.
Don't even get the fans going on that shit.
All right.
Seriously, I love you guys, and that's where I'm going to be right now. We're going to set that pace right now. I want the encouragement.
Yes.
Everybody that was like, oh, this is a curse. Fuck you. Don't watch this shit. Don't buy our stuff. We don't want you. Go watch Bellator or some other bullshit. Go find out some knockoff copy of what we got going on here. This is the OGs. I'm original genius here. And these guys right here, they want to try to be gangster and shit like that. Hey, you got to answer to me, Khabib. Right here, toe-to-toe, motherfucker. And we're going to go.
You're giving me goosebumps right now, Tony. I can't wait. I like April 18th, it feels like it's like an eternity away. But I'm very excited about this. It feels very long.
It is, but you know what? It's going to go great. Everybody stay busy, stay positive, stay healthy.
Yes.
Make sure you're eating right. The holidays are coming up. We just got out of Thanksgiving dinner. Make sure you go outside, unplug, go outside. You know what I mean? Go out there, break a sweat, catch a tan. Look at your skin. If it's pale, go out and get that vitamin D, baby.
Tony, how do you feel about the symbolism of this fight happening in Brooklyn after what happened 2 years ago? Do you like the fact that you're able to go back there and right that wrong?
I don't call it a wrong or a right. I just say it's God's will, man, and he's going to do what he's got to do. I can't say or do anything besides that, besides use the talents that he's given me. And that's right. That's the straight up righteous most thing I can do. is to do a lot better than what I've been doing. So if I've been doing good and I've been doing great, expect some better things.
You know, in the span of 24 hours, Thursday, Friday, two big fights were broken. First, Conor McGregor versus Donald Cerrone, and then your fight, Khabib versus Tony Ferguson. And we put up a poll, and I think right now, almost 40,000 people, we asked people, which fight are you more looking forward to? The Conor fight or the Khabib-Tony fight? And as of right now, we're at close to 40,000 votes, and your fight is winning by a landslide. Like, last I checked, it was 70-30 in favor of your fight. Does that surprise you?
No, absolutely not. I believe the fans understand that this is a super fight. You got two gamer opponents that can go all the way up to heavyweight and handle the best out of them. I know Khabib. He's got a whole country behind him, and what we're going to do is we're going to gain a whole country behind us. We already have the Russian fan base. They already like me better than that dude. I'm going to show up. I'm going to go and do what I do best and own that mat. It's my mat.
You think the Russian fans like you better than him at this point?
Oh, man, it's crazy. I have so much support from all over the world. It's especially in the B-boy community and the art community. And I mean, shit, dude, it's just me. The only thing I can really do is try to be me, not be fake. And the last year, especially when I put all those goofy videos, it was really fun for me, but it was a really hard time going through that surgery. So I fed off my fans and then vice versa, dude. So I have to say this whole people champ thing, it's really, really, really helping. And I really love my fans. They're cool. I give my shirt off the back to them. And they understand that this is for my family and for the people that are up and coming exactly like me.
That's great to hear, because I think sometimes people say that social media can be toxic and can make you actually feel down as opposed to up. But you're saying in your particular case, the fans actually helped you get out of that dark period.
Well, what I'm going to say is not just that. It's social media is a tool. And that's why, like, you know, people do, like, they cringe when I put capitals everywhere. And I'm like, look, dog, this is funny for me. It's because grammatically, I am correct. I know how to do this. MLA format, you know, APA, whatever one that you want. I'm very educated and I know how to do my shit. So when I go on social media and a lot of these grammar Nazis that are out there and they don't know how to have fun, I didn't read a rule book on this shit. So what I'm doing is I'm having fun and I'm using it as a tool to be able to use my art and put it out there so people can use their expressions how they want. This is how I have fun, man.
By the way, do you have a phone that allows you to do that and not have to, like, stop and capitalize every word, or do you actually have to stop and capitalize every word?
The Siri's pissed at me because all my words are capital now.
That's amazing.
It's an automatic correction for me.
It just does it automatically?
Yeah.
That's incredible. What a great luxury that is. Could I ask about the preparation for this fight? Are you the kind of guy that will watch a lot of footage before fighting someone, and in particular with someone like Khabib, who has been virtually unbeatable, and even, you know, they say he's only lost one round officially in the UFC. When you watch him, what holes do you see in his game?
We both fought Tebow. So any of my fans, go back and watch the Khabib Nurmagomedov versus Gleison Tebow fight.
Yep.
And then immediately afterwards, watch, I'm not going to talk to myself in a third person, but watch my badass self go in there and handle Tebow a lot better than the way that Khabib did. Now, when you know you lost, you're going to do whatever Khabib did after his fight. I'm not going to spoil it. I'm not going to give any spoilers. But I will say, though, Khabib is very beatable. And as far as filming everything, I'm looking at right here before I put on some music, I was watching Iaquinta versus Khabib at the Barclays Center to give me a good reminder of all the bullshit that happened and to make sure I put my energies to good use.
Will you see him before this fight? Are they planning any kind of press conference stuff or any sort of tours anything like that?
Oh, yeah. They're going to be releasing. They're probably going to drop it as soon as I say it because that's how I am. But, like, straight up, man, that's how I'm doing. I keep poking the bear, making shit happen. Everybody wants to stall. No, I'm going to put up my promos. I'm going to do what I got to do, and I'm going to keep it positive, man. I'm going to keep it going good. And I have to do that because it's my job, man. It's my career. It's not work to me. It's fun. It's a career.
When is that going to be?
Hey, dude, this is what I do, man.
No, the face-off, the next meeting with Khabib, when is that going to be?
That's what I'm saying. So, like, whenever they tell me, right, it's either going to be on the 13th or 14th. I mean, really, I'm going to keep poking the bear. I'm going to make sure that Khabib shows up, that he's going to go and he's going to see me before this year's done. He's going to understand. He's going to go through the holidays. He's going to be wondering about me. I'm going to be in his head again. So he's going to have a lot on his plate. And I think they got a little too arrogant with the way that they handled things. So
We'll see.
What have they said in particular that has bothered you?
I can't really embellish too much on exactly what they've said, but I have to say Aliyah Delabziz has been inside the ear. And as far as Khabib and I talking shit, we can go back and forth, but we're going to leave that for the phone call when okay. we do that interview.
Okay. And I'm just wondering if you've allowed yourself, Tony, to think about what would happen if you are the first man to beat Khabib and you win that belt after everything that you've been through, what that would mean for your family. Do you allow yourself to dream about what that moment would be like for you and your family, how it would feel? Do you go there when you think about this fight, when you dream about it?
No way, dude. He's another opponent. I already beat that dude. I showed up at UFC 209. I saw on his face. I saw quit. I called it out. I called my shot, and it worked. Now, I'm in this dude's head. He's, like, looking at me. He's going to train so hard, and he's going to be so nervous, he's going to make a mistake. I'm going to capitalize on that. I'm going to catch him during the scramble. Scrambled eggs, baby.
You think you'll finish him?
Man. Hey, I told everybody I'm gonna make him piss blood. I said that a while ago. I owe him two to the chops, and he owes me 20 push-ups. And that's what I'm saying. I'm gonna keep going there. And this guy's got an issue, and his name's Tony Ferguson, and I'm coming after him. It's hunting season, baby.
Was there any ever a point where you thought that this fight may not happen, where they would go in a different direction? Were you worried about that at all?
No way. I'm going to make it happen. The Russian demographics on my side, like I said. Khabib thinks he has that whole place over there. No way. Dude, I got my full country behind me, and I got the world. I'm the people's champ. Doesn't matter where you're from. I'm going to go out there, I'm going to fight. And people like that bloodshed, that crazy stuff with my elbows. Let's go.
And by the way, could I ask you, you just fought Donald Cerrone. Who do you think wins that fight, Cerrone or McGregor?
Boy, I have to say if Cerrone kicks him to the chops, McGregor's going to fall like a ton of bricks. But like I always say, I'm going to go for a double knockout.
So you think they're just going to both eliminate each other?
I think they're just going to go in there, guns a-blazing. I think it's going to be a good fight. I can't wait to watch it.
How's the academy doing?
Amazing. I'm done working on it. I got to call in some people to come and finish the trim and to hang up my posters and stuff, but it's done. I'm overdone working on it. It's time management, Ariel, and I'm back.
Okay, so is it open to the public?
No. It's a full private facility. My agents are actually helping me close it out before the year is done.
Okay.
And we're going to be having some tryouts, trainers and fighters. It's going to be interesting. And I'm actually going to be doing like a little press thing there. So
oh.
We'll keep you guys in the loop so that way you guys can come and watch me work out.
So and who will you be training? Like who will be your corner for this massive fight?
I have my crew that I pick from, and we actually get to have an extra one this time. Usually,
yeah,
I've been fighting main event for a very long time, right, and for champions, and I've never had to go backwards. So when I only had to have three cornermen back in there, I had to be very decisive on my main guys. But now I get to have one extra, so it's going to make interesting for who's going to be able to go back there, but. If my training partners are listening, or anybody that's up there, you guys are going to have to work. You guys want that spot? Going to have to work. Let's get this W.
And Tony, if you guys cross paths, if they do a press conference in Vegas, are you worried about any stuff? Like usually when you guys have been toe-to-toe, nothing has happened. Are you worried about any extracurricular stuff, any extra tension, any theatrics, fireworks, or do you think it will be relatively civil?
No. I think it's going to happen.
You do?
I call it out right now. Fuck yeah. It's gonna. You got two dudes that don't like each other, man. We can be civil. We can be like this. But if somebody's going to rub, I mean, you can't tell what the trans people are going to do. I could tell my crew is ready, man. My crew fucking trains a shitload of people. They train a fucking army. They don't even know. We might look like we're not much, but we handle shit. Look at me. I handle heavyweights. Ankle pick. I'm not scared of nobody. These guys want to go in there. I have to go one-on-one versus Khabib. If anybody want to fuck with us, they're going to ruin this shit. And then you're going to have a whole angry fucking mob of people after that one person, whoever fucked up. No way. Everybody play nice, or El Cucuy's going to come after your ass.
This is such a great story, Tony. I'm really happy for you. It's heartwarming after everything that you've been through and the bad luck that this particular fight has had on your side and his side, that they're going back to the well one more time. And I think it would have been one of the great travesties in the sport's history if we never got to see this fight. Both of you are, as we have on the screen right over here, tied for the longest active UFC winning streak right now, 12 apiece. You see the stats as I drop my, I'm so excited. I just dropped my trophy here, Tony. I'm very excited about this fight, and I think I speak for the entire MMA community. This is an amazing gift, and I hope that we all get to enjoy it on April 18th in Brooklyn.
You said it, man. You said it. You have a 12-win streak versus a 12-win streak. I mean, you can go back to the real record, but look at, man, one of us is going to walk away with just that one win streak. That's it. That's all you ever got. I can fight my way back through the consolation rounds. Khabib looks like he's done with this sport after me.
You think so?
I don't know. When I get done with him, he's going to think twice about wanting to get back in that octagon for a rematch or shit.
You don't feel that fire from him? You don't sense that anymore?
I don't know. I saw the way he was shadow boxing the other day. It looked like shit.
Did you see that video of him? Go ahead.
Nothing against him. He's enjoying his life. Khabib is on his world tour. I'm sitting here trying to, like, I'm not going to say I'm like Rocky or anybody else, man. I'm just exactly like myself. My pops said something because a coach said one thing. He's like, you're going to be the next so on and so forth, because he was like a four-time state champ. My pops looked at the guy's coach and he was like, fuck you. He's like, he's going to be the first Tony Ferguson. This is what I surround myself around, is greatness. When I went inside the Ultimate Fighter house, I had a lot of encouragement words that went with me, and I took that. Anybody who wants to be on this bandwagon, don't jump on it when it's too late. We're going, and we're coming hard like a crazy train. Khabib is going to get hit, baby. And respect to him and his team. Have a good training camp. Let's try to be civil. Let's make this shit work, and let's put some asses in the seats and sell out this motherfucker.
Yes. Oh my gosh. Give me one last thing. Did you see that video of him swimming upstream in the lake over there? Did you see that video, or the river, whatever it was? Did you see this video recently?
Yeah, he's just starting to swim now, but I've been swimming like a fucking Navy SEAL for the last couple of years. My coach has pushed me to the edge, and anybody that's ever seen me swim over a 24-hour fitness over here in OC,
yeah,
they know it's no fucking joke. My coach, Coach Billy, and Coach Eddie Bravo, and my coach, Coach Holloway, these guys push me to the limit. We'll butt heads once in a while, but we all know it's for one fucking thing, is to do the best thing that we can for our team. And I'm damn proud to have my guys on my team. And we're going to go. I'm looking at my belt right now, and I'm getting goosebumps, baby.
Yes.
I can't wait. I can't wait to put my belt versus his belt. I can't. It's champ shit only, Ariel.
TM. Trademark it.
Fuck yeah. It already is.
All right. Well, Tony, I wish you the best, my man. Happy holidays to you and your family. Hope everything goes well with the training camp, and I can't wait for it. I can't wait. April 18th, Brooklyn, New York, Barclays Center. Finally, fifth time's a charm. That's what they should put on the poster. Fifth time's a charm. The fight that everyone has been asking for. Tony Ferguson, Khabib Nurmagomedov for the undisputed UFC lightweight championship. I know you don't have to do this, Tony. I know you don't do a lot of media these days, but again, I'll just say it means a lot that you'll come on the show and that you'll talk to us. I really appreciate it.
All right, for sure. And you guys, make sure you follow me on my way to victory at Tony Ferguson XT on the little Tweety Bird thingy and on IG. We'll talk to you guys later.
All right. You're the man. There he is, Tony Ferguson, one of the great characters in this sports history. Let me pick up my trophy. I dropped my trophy. I knocked it down. I cannot wait. That was tremendous stuff from Tony Ferguson. What a promo, right? Whew. What a character. April, that's the kind of card, honestly, that like you don't really need to put a lot on it. That one sells itself. There's no one. If you go through every single weight class right now in the UFC, you can make a case, as you take a look at the winning streak right over here, you can make a case that, all right, this guy could fight that guy. Like, I don't know. Give me a weight class. 135. Cejudo could fight that guy. 125. He could fight that guy. Female. 115, Jean, you get my point. But this was the one weight class where it felt like everyone was in agreement. Everyone was in unison. Everyone felt the same. Everyone felt that this was the fight that had to happen. This was the fight to make. This was the only fight to make. And now here we go. It's happening, April 18th. Now I will say, I will repeat what I said at the top. It's a little worrisome that it's still 4.5 months away, given the history and all the crazy things. I mean, you saw that list right over there. Lung, rib, weight cut, the knee situation. That makes me a little nervous because it's, I mean, 4.5 months is an eternity. Think of the things that could happen in that stretch. But We're going to think happy thoughts, positive thoughts, and I feel like this time it's going to happen. I really do feel like this time it's going to happen. And what a great fight. Stylistically, we haven't even talked about that. How unorthodox Tony is, and considering how dominant Khabib is and how he has truly evolved into one of the greatest mixed martial artists of all time. Stylistically, so much fun. And the fact that we haven't seen these guys lose in so long. Khabib 28-0 on the 12-fight win streak in the UFC. Tony on the 12-fight win streak in the UFC. Tough champion. I mean, this is the best of mixed martial arts. This fight represents the best of mixed martial arts. And I can't wait. April 18th. What a great start to the year. All right, let's move along now and say hello to our next guest. He will be headlining this Saturday's event in Washington, D.C. against Jairzinho Rozenstruik. We spoke to Jairzinho last week on the program. Now we say hello to my old friend, Alistair Overeem, who's kind enough to join us. Yeah. Alistair, how are you? My guy.
Yeah.
How are you doing?
I miss you, man. Yeah, I'm good. I'm totally good. We wrapped the training camp. Tomorrow I'll be heading out to Washington. I'm very excited. And, yeah.
I must say I miss seeing you. How come I can't see you, Alistair? Is it because you're driving right now?
Yeah, I'm being driven, but my connection just now was not good. Now it's a little bit better, but... You know, you're going to be slowing down. It's going to get better. It's going to get worse.
Yeah.
Because I'm in the Rocky Mountains.
Okay.
Yeah. Beautiful out here. Cold. Yeah. That's that.
So you did the training camp again in Denver. You went back.
Yeah, of course, because that's my team now. Team Elevation.
Full time.
Yeah, kind of full time. I took a little time off after the last fight with Alexa Linick in St. Petersburg, and I did some travels, had some time off, and then I returned, what was it, July, hoping to fight sooner, actually. I was aiming to fight September, and then September passed, tried to fight October passed, and then November, couldn't get a fight, but then December was the first opportunity. And even that came into peril because of Walt maybe pulling out. Well, unfortunately he did, but understandably. So, and then now we're with Rozenstruik.
And could I ask you about that, Alistair? Because I know that you went to D.C. with Walt Harris. You guys did some promotional tour. You met with the Capitals and whatnot. And then shortly thereafter, you find out about what happened to his poor daughter, Anaya Blanchard. As you were, as a father yourself of daughters, as you were seeing this play out, I know you posted about it on social media, and you're supposed to fight this man, and then eventually he pulls out. How are you reacting to this?
It's very, very unfortunate what happened. It's disgusting, actually. I met Walt for the first time, and we did the PR tour in Washington, D.C. Super cool guy, nice, open, humble, you know, a friend, instantly a friend. And, yeah, then this news came true. I've been following it daily on Twitter. The information was kind of limited, but she went missing, of course, first. And then, unfortunately, a couple of days ago, they found the body, and it's just despicable. So my heart goes out to Walt. It's going to be a very, very tough time for him. Yeah, and it's just terrible.
And then
no
you
words.
Get... Yeah, it's horrible. It's, I mean, unimaginable. And we all feel the same way. And then you get Jairzinho Rozenstruik. How much did you know about Jairzinho? Like, had you ever heard of him prior to being given him as the option?
Well, coincidentally, I did see him fight. I did see him fight Ondrejovski. So, I saw that from him. I didn't really see his other fights. Didn't really know where he's from. So he's actually from the Netherlands. He's Dutch. With Suriname heritage. He kind of represents Suriname. But I kind of like looking at some interviews and I'm like, yeah, this guy speaks Dutch.
Yeah.
I hadn't known of him before. I didn't know him from Holland, but yeah, it's nice to see a fellow Dutchman do good in the UFC. And I'm very happy that he stepped up, right? It's a big opportunity for him, but I'm very happy that he took it because otherwise I didn't have a fight.
Obviously, he's the kind of fighter right now who's a bit of a rising star, not a household name like you are. Is this a hard fight to get up for because he doesn't have that name attached to him, or do you not care? A fight's a fight.
To me, I don't care. You know, I put in the work. I'm just happy to fight, show the fans what I got. it is a different, kind of a different matchup, right? Jorginho is like a different type fighter, but, you know, UFC, everybody's tough. And, yeah, I don't know. I feel ready. I feel ready for whoever.
And at this point in your career, are you enjoying the renaissance right now? I mean, the two quick finishes, it seemed like not that long ago people were counting you out. Do you feel like you have some renewed optimism surrounding your career, a new outlook on the career, maybe one more title run left in you? How are you approaching this maybe final chapter of the career?
Well, definitely one more title run in me. I mean, we're two fights up, two first-round KO finishes. So, yeah, we're just going to ride it out, right? And very excited. With joining the new team, Team Elevation in Denver. That's why I've been spending a lot of time here with the guys. Great chemistry in the crew. Curtis Blaze has been awesome. And, yeah, we just have a great, great thing going. So, yeah, like I said, a lot of work has been put in, and I'm looking forward to sharing that this Saturday.
I saw on your Instagram you celebrated Thanksgiving. You had a traditional Thanksgiving meal, or did you have a Dutch-inspired Thanksgiving meal? What was it like, and how did you enjoy it?
No, actually, the hotel that I stayed at organized a nice dinner for me and my team. And it was a turkey, and a huge turkey, by the way. Yeah, so it was kind of nice. It was kind of nice.
Yes. Is that your first time celebrating or partaking in the Thanksgiving festivities?
No, I've been in the States 7 years now, living here officially. So I've had a couple other Thanksgiving, but I never really understood the whole thing about it. You know, it's food, of course, and gathering of people, nice. But now I kind of got a little bit more in depth and organized my own dinner. So, yeah, one baby steps, right?
Yes, I like it. You're embracing the culture. By the way, I noticed a new episode of The Ream is out. I'm happy that you're continuing doing The Ream. It's a bit of a different look these days, color as opposed to black and white, but I like it. And you were in Bratislava, correct? Doing a seminar there, and then you met up with your old friend Remy Bonjasky. I mean, what was that all like? And how did you end up there? Because it seemed like a ways away from Denver or wherever you live these days.
Well, I mean, I was in Holland this summer. I was in Dubai. I was doing a tour. I was all over the place, actually, to be honest. But that was a little bit my time off, right? Traveling, of course, training, but a little bit. And then I just, you know, relaxing the mind a little bit, enjoying food, seeing the world. That's one of my hobbies, traveling, seeing stuff, you know, different cultures. So, yeah, went to Bratislava, did the seminar there. Was with a good friend of mine, Mike, cool guy. And, yeah, just, you know, holidays, but a little bit working holidays.
Yes, I like it. The Ream's still going. Are you going to have another episode before the fight on Saturday, or is that it?
After the fight, we're going to have an episode straight away.
Oh, okay. So nothing else before the fight?
No.
Okay.
Nothing before the fight, but after the fight, we're going to release them straight away.
All right. And so now...
Is that good enough for you?
Quite frankly, I used to remember a time where you would come out with the fight before, like the Friday before. You'd come out with a clip or an episode the Friday before the fight, you know, like the day before. That used to be very exciting. You used to do that. You remember that, right?
Yeah, I do, of course. And there's another thing that you haven't even seen, the movie.
The movie?
Yeah, the movie. We started this whole thing with a movie, but that's like a long time ago, 2005, 2006. So that's also pretty cool. Well, I'm going to have a look into that to get that, to do something like that.
Interesting. So you're going to put together like a feature film?
Well, I don't know. Maybe I have to look at the footage because it's kind of like old, right?
Yeah.
It was actually the 2005 Light Heavyweight Grand Prix, which kind of started this whole Dream thing. But I'm going to look into it because, you know, our attention span is a little bit faster now, and the movie might be a little bit slow because it was like 2 hours.
No, I want it. Give me the movie, Alistair. Inject it into my veins. This is what I want. No one has documented their career like you have from beginning to end, and I want the comprehensive look. Okay, don't get lazy on me now.
I'm gonna have a look into it.
Yes, please have a look. If you need me to talk to anyone to get this going, I'd be happy to do so. And by the way, Alistair, what's that?
Are you going to be in Washington?
Unfortunately, I'm sad to say that I will not be in Washington for this particular event, but I will be watching from home and wishing you the best from afar. Is that good enough?
Yeah, in New York, right?
Yes.
That's like Manny.
Well, I don't make those decisions, but are you trying to say that you're going to come visit me after the fight? Is that what you're implying, or at least hoping that I extend the invitation for?
Hey, Harold, you don't want me to come over with my suitcases.
Why not?
Because I would stay over.
Let me tell you something. It would be one of the great honors of my life if you stayed at my house. Are you kidding me? I don't know if we have a bed big enough for you or the kind of meat that you like to consume, but it would be an absolute honor. My house is always your
house. But listen, you changed the subject. Because it is a little bit weird. You're not coming to my fight, which is so close.
Yes. But it's not personal. I will assure you of that.
Okay. Apologies, sir.
Are you still eating the horse meat these days, Alistair? I just want to know what to make for dinner.
Turned into turkey, right?
That's right. For the holiday, but in general.
So the whole meat thing, I've explained it like 1,000 times, but I'll do it. Gladly do it again for you. The meat thing, the horse meat thing, is like horse meat is legal and normal in Holland to consume. You can just buy it in the grocery stores. Here in the States, it is like it's a big thing, right? It's like because it's like a noble animal or something.
Yes.
Yeah.
Because why is that even? Because the Wild West times.
Okay, I don't know.
You don't know why people don't eat horse meat?
I mean, I never really looked into it, no. I mean, I just assume that people don't like to eat horse meat.
No. I mean, because of the Wild West times, it's kind of considered noble animal, so they don't eat horse. But in Europe, it's normal. Yeah, it's a normal thing. You can just buy it. Go to the Walmart, go to the Whole Foods.
You get it.
Buy horse on your sandwich. Normal thing.
So when you're in America doing your training camp, do you miss it? Do you feel like it's an essential part of your diet and it's like lacking because you're here?
Well, yeah, it's been a while that I ate it, but now that you mention it, I'm also going to dive into that. I'm going to get some more, because after the fight, I'm going to go to the Netherlands.
Oh.
Celebrate the Christmas and New Year's there, and I'm going to have some horse.
Okay. One of the all-time great clips in the history of the internet was you talking about your daily schedule. First you sleep, then you eat, then you wake up, then you sleep, then you eat. Remember that clip? That was in your little kitchen there?
Yep.
Time flies. By the way, Alistair, could I ask you, what do you think of Israel Adesanya, a guy coming from kickboxing and doing so great in MMA? Are you intrigued by this man? Are you impressed by him?
Yeah, I'm definitely intrigued. I think he's doing awesome, and he's finishing opponents. I'm also a fan of Robert Whittaker, but he just got finished by Israel Adesanya.
Yes.
So that just tells you, because Robert is legit, right? Beat Jacare, beat Joe Romero twice.
Yep.
Super strong fighter, super exciting fight style. But then he gets finished by Israel Adesanya, which is like, yeah. And the thing was like, Israel is proving it time and time again against Gastelum, then against Robert Whittaker. So, yeah, I'm definitely a fan. You know, I like his whole persona. I think he's cool. I think his dance moves or, manga, Japanese cartoon stuff is cool. So definitely a fighter that I enjoy watching.
Well,
and
let me
better fight it seems.
Well, I'll tell you this, Alistair. I enjoy watching you. Always and forever. It's so great to see you back. I'm sorry that I won't be there in person. I'm sorry for letting you down. But I'm looking forward to it, and the matchup is intriguing. And I want to wish you the best this Saturday as you go up against Jairzinho Rozenstruik. Big fight for you. Big fight for him. I'm expecting big things.
Yeah, it's going to be exciting. I'm on it ready. It's all good for victory. And Arrow, appreciate your kind words. And I'll see you again soon, I guess, right? Somewhere, someplace, sometime.
I hope so. Don't be a stranger, okay? Next time after the win, let's do it via Skype, okay? Okay.
Okay.
All right. Bye-bye. Out. There he is. The Ream. Alistair Overeem. The one and only. Returns this Saturday against Jairzinho Rozenstruik. I just like saying that name over and over again. By the way, that lineup, we put the main card earlier. But the undercard is nice as well. Can I just mention a couple of the names? Thiago Alves, Tim Means. For some reason, Corporate Jake has this thing where he doesn't like to show the undercard. It's a very, if I could just be honest for a second, it's a very casual way of presenting a fight card. I mean, to me, top to bottom, right? Trevor Smith, Mallory Martin, Matt Wyman. You didn't put Matt Wyman on the list. Matt Wyman's coming back. You kidding me? Bryce Mitchell, 11-0 against Matt Sales. Come on. Alves Means. I mean, you don't want to miss this. And then, of course, the Ream at the top of the card. All right. One more guest to go, and I'm really looking forward to this. As I mentioned at the top of the show, it's been a while since we talked to this man, and he just returned last Saturday in London, won in his Bellator debut. What a great fight against Sam Cecilia. And then afterwards really opened up about why he's been away, why he had not fought in 18 months. And so it is a great pleasure to say hello once again to the man they call the Haggis Hunter, the Flying Judoka himself, the great Robert Whiteford of Scotland, joining us right now via the magic of Skype. Robert, how are you?
It's been too long, hasn't it?
It has, my friend. Where have you been?
Here and there. Be back there, be back here.
Well, I'm happy to see you. Congratulations on the win recently, and welcome back. First off, what a fight, right? I mean, wow. Did you think that you had to score? That was like a knockout with just seconds remaining in the third round at the very end of the fight, one of the latest knockouts in Bellator history. Did you think that you had to do that in order to win the fight?
I mean, it's a bit crazy because obviously when you're involved in the fights, you don't really realize what's been going on. After the fight, I hadn't even realized I'd been dropped in that third round. It's a good job. I knocked him out and I didn't leave it to the judges, but he's a tough boy, isn't he?
And how did you end up with Bellator?
So obviously, I was tied in with ACB for a while, and I couldn't get out the contract for love nor money. They just wouldn't let me go. I had lawyers involved and stuff. And the matchmaker at Bellator, Jude Samuel, became really good friends with him, and he was just always at me to sign for a promotion. He was excited for me to fight for Bellator, so he was always on my case and just messaging me. So as soon as I got released, he found out about it and messaged me right away, and the deal was done within a day, basically.
All right, so that was your debut. You win with 6 seconds remaining. By the way, when I'm talking, are you hearing like a funny feedback, or is it just me?
Just you.
Okay, all right. I guess I'll fight through it. I'm hearing like crazy noise in my ear, but I shall fight through that. So you win with 6 seconds remaining. That's your fourth win in a row. And afterwards, I was watching the post-fight scrum, and you're talking to the reporters. And then I come to the realization. I was like, yeah, it has been 18 months since your last fight, and you were on a 3-fight winning streak for ACB after you left the UFC. And you opened up about why you had been away, and it was very emotional, and I'm sure it was hard for you to even talk about that. And so for those that missed it, I don't know if you're comfortable, but could you explain why it was so long in between fights for you in the midst of a winning streak?
You're going to try and get me all emotional here again, aren't you, like you always do?
No. I'm just genuinely curious.
So obviously, just the ACB situation, couldn't get released from them, and then obviously, as I mentioned in my post-fight interview, the breakdown of my marriage and stuff just became a really difficult time for me. It took a while to get back to being myself. Ended up drinking a lot, couldn't get out of my bed, had to go to counselling. I was just really messed up. I was in a bad place, and I was just really lucky I had my friends around about me to pull me out of that hole.
Do you mind, Robert, if possible, to speak a little closer to the phone or computer just so we can hear you a little better? Is that okay?
Yeah, cool.
Okay, cool.
Yes.
So you got married in the midst of that time, and it just didn't work out right off the bat?
No, it worked out. Who knows what goes wrong in marriages? I suppose everybody hits a bump in the road in marriage. It's never easy, and I knew that when I signed up for a marriage, but just sometimes it takes two parties to make it work, didn't it? And the other one wasn't willing to make it work, so I had to go our own ways eventually.
And why were you, like you talked about the depression and the alcoholism and not leaving your bed for 3 weeks. Was that because of the marriage, or was it because of other things that were going on as well?
It wasn't the marriage. Probably one of the worst things I've ever had to go through in my life. It was just a really difficult time for me. And I'm just happy I got through and I got to the light at the end of the tunnel, because without my pals and fighting, obviously, I don't know where I'd be today. It was just one of the most difficult, horrendous times I've ever went through in my life. As I said, depression, anxiety, scared to leave the house, couldn't get out of my bed, end up having to go to counselling. And it really came to the point, one of my old training partners I hadn't actually seen for years, heard about the situation I was in. He started coming up and dragging me out of my bed at 8 o'clock in the morning, 9 o'clock in the morning to get me back training and down lifting weights with him and his wife, Laura.
So you really went 3 weeks without leaving your bed?
Probably longer, to be honest. That was just off the top of my head, probably longer. I couldn't leave the house.
Wow. And had you ever experienced anything like that before in your life?
Never, because I don't mean to blow my own trumpet or anything like that, but the sport I'm in and the kind of the role that I take of myself, I'm like the alpha male and always hold myself in high regards, high esteem. And to find myself being that low and in such a place, I could never imagine it happening to me. And I've seen it happen to other people and questioned how they get themselves in that condition. And no, no, why? There's no real explaining it. It can happen to the best of us, I suppose.
How long did the whole stretch last from beginning to end when you started to feel down to when you started to feel like you were getting back to your old self?
February till maybe like 3 months ago.
Wow. So 3 months ago would be what, August? So like we're talking like 5-6 months.
I didn't take that lightly either. That was a big commitment for me. So really, when my marriage did break down, it was like my whole world did, came crashing down and really like got up out of bed in the morning for. When you're on top of the world and you think you've got your life planned out and settled down, married and ready to have kids, and it comes crashing down, it's a hard blow to take.
Were you blaming yourself as well? Did you feel like you were the reason why, or was it, you know, just not the right kind of match?
No, I mean, initially you do blame yourself. You think how this can't go wrong, how this isn't going right. But then just the actions of my partner really hit the nail on the head. And at the end of it, when you come out, you realise it wasn't you. But I mean, I'm not saying I was a perfect husband or the perfect guy. Nobody is perfect, right? But I'm just happy that I'm back to being my old self just now. And hopefully it can last. You know, I still don't feel 100% there. But I'm getting there slowly, and I mean, like back speaking to guys like you and back fighting and stuff, it just remembers me the place I came from and who I'm actually deep down. You know, I was partying there for a full year, drinking every day, as I said, and I just lost myself. So it's been a long road to get back even here, and I want to stay focused and just drive forward, and that's why I want to stay active with Bellator and get back out fighting again. And a huge shout out to American Top Team as well. You know, I hadn't been there, as you said, I hadn't fought for 18 months. And as soon as I got in touch with them and told them I had a fight organised, they opened their doors to me again with open arms, and I stayed in the dorms again over there and hooked back up with my wee pal Kyoji Horiguchi and stuff. So it was good being back there, and coaches made me feel welcome again like I'd never been away.
Do you feel like you're back to your old self, or not quite yet?
Nah, not quite yet. Never. To be honest, I'll probably, there's a bit of me missing, and when all that shit happened and it went down the way it did, I probably lost a bit of myself. I'll never get back. But what can you do? You just got to keep your head high and try and get somewhere in life. I mean, life's a fight for everybody. It's not just me goes through shit. But if I can manage to stay on the road I was projecting for myself, I'll be happy about that. As long as I can stay away from the partying and the drinking, the drugs and stuff, I'll be cool.
And going through that fight camp and then the fight week and going through the fight itself on the Saturday and making the walk, what was that like for you? Like your confidence, your mental state as you were about to fight Sam, was that one of the toughest experiences of your fighting career?
No, really, to be honest, like, I fight because it's easy for me. I would literally fight for nothing. They don't need to pay me. And should maybe not say that live on camera because it'll fuck up my next contract if I'm wanting more money, but I would fight for free. So when I'm making that walk and when I'm in training camp, I'm actually in my element. I'm actually, that's me being myself. And as strange as it might sound for normal people, me fighting and training the way I do it, it makes me feel normal. I actually feel at home there. But in the changing rooms and especially when I go to the cage, I remember getting in the cage and I seen a lot of blood on the canvas. And as you said, 18 months is a long time out. And I thought to myself, what the fuck am I doing in here? I questioned myself a little bit. But honestly, I just felt at home, and it felt, as mad as it sounds, it felt great to be punching somebody in the face again and getting paid for it.
And did you sign a multi-fight deal with Bellator or just that one fight?
No, I signed four fights.
Okay.
So hopefully I can get the ball rolling the start of the year quick and get back out and then get them in Glasgow. As Scott Coker nicely emailed me and told me he was wanting to bring a show to Glasgow and
in his plans. I know for the longest time you were, you know, gunning to get back in the UFC and you were upset that you left, but have you put that dream on hold? Are you happy with Bellator? Even if you don't get back to the UFC, will you be okay with that?
Oh, definitely. I mean, it's like going back to a violent ex or something, isn't it? The UFC, I mean, they burn you so bad, but you still want to go back there. The Bellator's showing me love right now, and as I said, they're signing a four-fight deal. And they've got big plans, and especially with this Euro series going on, I'm happy to fight local in the European scene, and hopefully my fans and stuff and my friends can come to these shows. It's easier for me. And I'll probably finish my career with Bellator if they keep me around long enough.
In between these fights now and in between, you know, the camps and whatnot, what are you doing to try to, as you said, you know, stay clean, not do drugs, not drink, not get down? How do you continue, you know, progressing and building on the positivity of that last victory?
Well, as I said, I've got the best friends in the world. You know, I'm really lucky they've stuck by me. And they wouldn't allow that to happen anyway. But the kind of fucking crazy thing is that the 18 months being off, you pick up friends that you never had before, and they're doing fucking shit that you shouldn't be doing, or stuff that's no me. So it's no trying to break away from that and keep myself and, like, going forward and not fall back into that. But, like, I was out for dinner last night and I had a couple of pints of beer, and I was back to being my old self. I was fucking steaming on one pint.
I don't even know if I know what that means. What does that mean, steaming on one pint?
Have you ever heard the saying, you can't drink soup?
Have you ever heard the what?
The saying, you can't drink soup?
No.
That's a good Scottish saying, meaning you're a lightweight.
Oh,
like basically one beer and I'm fucked.
Good. That's like me. That's like me my whole life. We should hang out.
You can't drink soup?
No.
Let me hear you say that.
Wait, you want me to say it?
I want you to say, I can't drink soup.
What? I can't even drink soup? I don't even understand.
That means you're a lightweight.
I am a lightweight. That I understand. That I understand very clearly. But no, that drinking stuff is not for me. I'm happy you're doing better. I'm happy you are starting to turn the corner. And I was really happy to see you back on track, getting that opportunity, getting that victory. It was a crazy fight, back and forth. Both of you deserve a lot of credit for that. And I'm happy that you got that win with just 6 seconds remaining, Robert. And I'm hoping that you're still eating the haggis, right? You're still partaking in that, yes?
Oh, hunting on haggis and scanning it and cooking it, yeah.
Good man. Good man. I haven't forgotten.
Like the cereal, when I fought Sam Cecilia at the weekend, and honestly, couldn't have met a nicer guy. He's one of the OGs, and it was super friendly and really nice, and I'm glad that we put on a great fight for the fans, and he went home safe to his family.
Amen. Well, I wish you the best, Robert. Keep in touch, my man. Keep it up. Keep working hard and, you know, staying out of all that other stuff, and you're on a roll, my man, and you're still one of the best fighters in the world, in my opinion, and so I hope nothing but the best for you. Continued success, continued health. 2020 is going to be a big year for the Haggis Hunter. I feel it, my man, all right? So I'm expecting big things from you.
I love it. Keep hitting up, and we'll keep these interviews rolling.
All right, my man. We'll talk to you soon. There he is, Robert Whiteford of Scotland, the pride of Scotland. In fact, they tell me the first Scottish fighter to be signed by the UFC way back when, in 2013. His four-fight winning streak is an impressive one. Was released in 2016, but recently had his Bellator debut and scored that win over Sam Cecilia, his first win via KO slash TKO since 2015. That London card was great. It was a lot of fun, and that was the best fights, one of the best fights on the card. So if you missed it, go back and check it out. Great action and a great finish. All right. We're just about done, but I'm told that Corporate Jake has some sort of like best of highlight of the show today. Is this accurate? Okay. Oh, okay. Well, they tell me the show is too long. I'll personally say it's a little too short. But anyway, if you missed anything on today's episode, here's what you may have missed. Here's the best of. Why'd you stop after three fights?
I tore my bicep.
Oh no. Oh my gosh. Yeah. Holy smokes. Really. It seems like there is an issue there. Where does that stem from?
I had no problems with him until that particular moment.
Hey, you got to answer to me, Khabib. Right here, toe to toe, motherfucker. And we're going to go.
Are you going to bleach your hair back to blonde, or are you going to keep it this way?
I'm going to keep it for a while because looks like everybody likes it.
Let me tell you something. This guy's a huge MMA fan. He's a huge Errol Hawani fan.
Oh.
And
what?
He said that's my guy.
So you're the intergender champion?
Looks like, yes.
I've noticed since then he doesn't say anything about it anymore.
Yeah, because he's like a real fighter. He has to accept his... like he's lose via rear naked choke.
I told everybody I'm gonna make him piss blood. I said that a while ago.
Let's see, here you go. Here's the first official.
It's good.
You like it?
Can you do that for me? Is there a chance that you'll actually fight with the mask?
I will do it for you, my friend.
Really?
This is beautiful.
You love
Rampage.
It.
What's your problem, man?
I know, and I'm getting goosebumps, baby.
Yes.
I can't wait to put my belt versus his belt.
It would be one of the great honors of my life if you stayed at my house. Are you kidding me? I don't know if we have a bed big enough for you or the kind of meat that you like to consume.
Yeah, cheers. L'chaim.
L'chaim, yes. This is incredible.
Wow, that was great. Is that like a one-off, or is this like a new weekly thing that we're doing?
No, this will be a weekly thing. Going
wow.
Forward. Yep.
Who's responsible for this?
Mike and Toby.
Oh my gosh, Mike and Toby, you are the real MVPs of the day. Now, do we have an update on the poll?
Yes, we do. Sitting at, just under 50,000 votes.
Whoa.
Which main event are you looking forward to most? Tony versus Khabib with 69%. And Conor versus Cerrone, 31%.
Wow. Almost 50,000 votes? That's got to be a record.
Yeah, it's since we've been doing the polls, this is the most votes we've had during the show.
Okay. Thank you for voting. A reminder, once again, go to V.org to donate or find more information on the V Foundation. Stuart Scott Day this Wednesday. We're going to have his longtime friend and partner, Rich Eisen, on the podcast. If you're not listening to the Wednesday podcast, do check it out. It's on the same feed as all the other podcasts. You know, this one, you get the Monday show and the Wednesday show. Spotify, they told me to start talking about that. Apple Podcasts, Google, all that stuff and more. So check that out on Wednesday. And then the Fight Like Hell Night on Saturday, DC, Overeem, Rosenstruck. So it's been a fun day. Thanks to all of you. Oh, and by the way, tomorrow, December 13th, we've got tickets on sale. No, did I say 13th? Well, December 13th, tickets on sale tomorrow for the December 13th show in Las Vegas, 1 p.m. Eastern. I will tweet out the link for the road show. Four new contestants. I will tell you who they are next week, but four new ones, trivia challenge. It's going to be great. Now I have to drive back home in a snowstorm. Please pray for me. Thank you very much, Saif Saud. Thank you very much, Valentina Shevchenko. Alberto El Patron. Good luck to him. Israel Adesanya. Thank you very much to the great Tony Ferguson, Alistair Overeem, and of course, my pal and yours, Robert Whiteford. If you missed anything, check it out. Replays, YouTube, Spotify, Apple, all those places and more. Back next week, same time and place. Till I say peace. I'm out of here.